Welcome. I'm going to call the Tax Committee to order. We are waiting for a quorum. I know people are getting back from the floor, but since we have a full agenda, we just want to get started. And I just want to welcome everyone back and just take a couple seconds to introduce the new committee administrator. Ms. Heidi Locke is right here. If you have not already met her, just contact her anytime. So welcome, Heidi. And Mars Beltrandi is our page for the year, so wave there. And Mars is available for anybody who needs anything from all of us up here. So please send him your notes and information. So thank you. With that, I think what we're going to do is, I know a lot of legislators have a lot of meetings this evening with their constituents and lots of places they need to be, and I know a lot of people in the audience do as well. So we do want to try to make these 25 bills go as quickly as possible. And I didn't get a chance to talk to Representative Davids about this, but what I was thinking might help us all is if we can group them, because we have many multiple authors. I think you and I are carrying almost identical bills, where we would each member would get their hearing, per se. We'll move the bills and lay them over, but we could take testimony as groups. So if we start with federal conformity, then people can testify to that. And another thing I was thinking, when we don't normally do in tax, is that members who are on the committee who have about half the bills are the members of the committee. We could just move them from where we're sitting, too. I mean, we wouldn't have to go through the whole, go to the table. So that would save a lot of time. And again, I do know both sides of the aisle have talked to me about pressing needs they have. Additionally, I should say other people have other committees. And we know that people have to go to those other committees and people will be coming and going. So please do that and just let Ms. Kunisch know where you're going. And so if your bill comes up or you want to be back for a bill, we can send someone to get you. So we'll make sure everyone is accommodated to the best of our ability. I know also a few people in the audience have told me they have folks who have places to get. And we will try to get them to where they need to go as quickly as possible, too. So if that's okay, because we have a quorum, I'm first going to move a bunch of property tax bills down to division. And so I'm going to move House File 2137, 2102, 2013, 1932, 1914, 1905, 1895, 1884, 1883, and 1858 are now referred to the Property and Local Tax Division.
Madam Chair?
Yes. Please, Representative Luton.
Thank you, Representative Lincheski, Madam Chair. I appreciate it. Just before we move into the meat of today's hearing, I just wanted to raise a concern that I've heard from a couple of members. And I know today is the first day of session, the first day of hearings, and that's always a little chaotic. But some members whose bills were placed on the agenda did not get notified if they're not on the tax committee until late on Friday, or maybe even pick up those emails until the weekend. And so I'm just, you know, as we work through this, and I know that the session is compressed, so time will be short, if we can just make sure that we've got an opportunity for members to be aware that their bill is going to be coming up, because some of them have, you know, constituents and that want to come and testify, and it just created some difficulty for a few of our folks on some of the bills we're going to hear today. So I just wanted to bring that up while we're talking about process moving forward.
Sure. Thank you for that, Representative Lunan. And I did get some feedback on that, and we certainly apologize if members didn't know their bills were up. I should say, just a reminder, you're back in tax committee, you know, there are no deadlines here. And generally, you know, you would get 24 hours of notice. And this was actually the 21st, I believe, every member was sent an email that their bill was heard. And I know with a weekend, not everyone sees that. So I hope people, you know, can understand our interest in accommodating both sides. They are very eager to get to tax cuts, and so we are trying to get them all heard here today so that we can be in a position that if we can get some agreement to do that, we'd be ready for that. So I hear you, Representative Loon, and I think what happened is all members may have received an email that their bill is up, but not everybody's legislative assistant. And I know there's some old school legislators who don't always read their email, and we'd like to get them to all read their email. And so if they, you know, we all know that the best way is often to copy a legislative assistant, and so we miss that. So we apologize.
Yes, some of us are powerless without our LAs, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay, so thank you for that. And with that, then, I'm going to go ahead and move the first bill on the agenda, which is mine, which is House File 2106. And we're having a cell phone problem somewhere. So just good. So reminders that cell phones, even turned on, create a buzz next to the microphones. You actually have to power them off. Or if Representative Garofalo is here, he always says airplane mode works as well. I'm not sure about that. I just turned mine off. So I'll take all the... It's hard to get back in the groove of remembering all these things. Mine's on too, so there we go. Okay, and to get this in the, and we'll take every member's bills in the order, or we'll get them in the order they want. So I would like to move the DE2 delete all amendment to House File 2106 to get it in the order I want. That should be in people's packets. I'm sorry, I'm looking for the next amendment, but this one should be in your packet, the DE2. So to get that in the order, I'd like the bill. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted. I have a second amendment, and I guess it hasn't been copied, so... Oh, it's copied. Here it comes. We're finding it. The DE2. And, you know, while it's coming, I'll just talk about how I have my bill. And I know this is going to get really confusing, members, because federal conformity, maybe we should just take a minute and talk about that. Maybe Representative Davids and I both should. You know, what is it? It is when the federal government passes on tax preferences and tax benefits to Minnesotans, we need to affirmatively act, or many of those benefits are lost to our residents. So we tried doing this last year, and we're trying again this year. And members are carrying a lot of bills that address one part of conformity and not another, or a couple and maybe not all. And I think Representative Davids and I have probably the most inclusive approaches in our bills with our amendments. And so we want to take testimony on all the bills. But Representative Davids, did you want to add to that before we kind of get into the nuance of these?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I do think that this is a very important issue. Minnesotans are filing their tax returns right now. And I would think we would do some form of conformity in anything we do. We're going to set up a situation where Minnesotans have to file amended returns and so forth. So the quicker we can do this, as much as we can do it, that's what I'm very interested in. Hopefully we can move that forward.
Thank you. Okay, so I'm now going to move the A3. That's the second amendment to get my bill in the order I wanted. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. The A3 is adopted. So to 2106, I want to briefly say what's in this bill, and then we'll have all the other legislators talk about what's in their bill. And the best thing, I think, is we're going to have Ms. Manzi answer members' questions, because we all know she's the one who really knows the detail. So the bill I'm just now moved, we would conform to retroactively to 2013, so this current tax year and going forward, the education savings accounts, the employer-provided educational assistance, the National Health Services Corp scholarships, the employer-provided adoption assistance, the higher education tuition deduction, qualified conservation easements, direct transfers from IRAs to charities, discharge of indebtedness on a principal residence, and that's for foreclosures and short sales, various expensing depreciation provisions, and other various provisions affecting businesses. We can get into the details of those. Student loan interest deduction, the working family credit, the educator classroom expense deduction, mortgage insurance premiums, itemized deductions, and parity and transportation fringe benefits. Additionally, going forward, we will eliminate the marriage penalty through the standard deduction relief, and we will conform on the dependent care credit. So I think I've covered everything in my bill. And Ms. Manzi, please correct me if I got something wrong there. Okay, so that's okay. Okay, so with that, I'm going to lay this bill over so we can hear them all. We'll still keep hearing them all, but just to move them through, I'm going to lay it over for further consideration. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. The bill is now laid over, and we will go to the next bill. And then again, if we can have everyone testify on all the bills as a group, I think it'll save a couple hours in this committee today. Representative Earhart, you're next. Are you ready? I don't know where he is. He is House File 1957. Is that right? And Representative Earhart, we understand you have an amendment.
I do.
So Representative Earhart moves House File 1957 and for further for future consideration, and your amendment, Representative Earhart.
The amendment, Madam Chair, extends this into beyond 2013, as I think you're I think you did that to other things in the
Yes, I apologize. We didn't vote on that getting it before us. So all those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. The bill is before us, and now we're going to move the Earhart Amendment. Do you have the number? Is it in the pocket?
I don't know if anybody has it.
Ms. Manzi, do you have it?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the amendment is numbered H1957A1.
Okay, Mr. Beltrandi, no pressure being first day. Do you know where that amendment is? I don't have it in my packet.
A1, 1957 A1.
Yes, that's
very good. Perfect. So, Representative Earhart, do you want to tell us what your bill does while we're getting your amendment? What are you doing here with federal conformity?
Did she call me Erickson?
Earhart.
Oh, now I feel better. Madam Chair, this takes care of when you have a restructured mortgage and or a default on the mortgage, and you have a foreclosure, and you end up with having indebtedness that was greater than your mortgage that's forgiven, that formerly was you'd have to pay tax on that amount. Now, however, the federal government has started the federal exclusion in 2007 and kept extending it through 2012, and then they did it in 2013 again, and Minnesota did not conform with this last change, so therefore this bill would extend that to all of those who had the occurrence in 2013 as well and ongoing. And I would like to quote from all-seeing, all-knowing governor who says, I know what he said, it's right here. Anybody who's had the misfortune of having to sell a $600,000 home for $200,000 certainly shouldn't have to pay taxes on a paper loss that somehow counted as income. I'm very willing to take a look at what we can do in the next legislative session to retroactively exclude that income from state taxation. And by passing this bill, we will be able to do that, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay, so Representative Earhart now moves the amendment that's before us, which is the 81957A1. Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. The amendment's adopted. And we're going to now lay over Representative Earhart's bill for future consideration. So thank you. And next.
Madam Chair.
I'm sorry, Representative Anderson.
We did just get the Earhart amendment.
Oh.
So
okay, I apologize.
If we could just slow down just a little bit so at least we get the paperwork beforehand.
You know, and I'm happy to do that. It's actually members who've requested me not to do that. So I think folks need to make a decision here. I know a lot of people told me they have somewhere to be tonight. So we'll slow down. Okay. So okay. So we'll wait for that and let us know when you're ready to take that up.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Loon maybe had a good solution to the problem. Could we have all the amendments passed out?
I thought they were all in the packet. So if there's any amendments. Okay. Ms. Kunis says some of them just came. So that folks have been amending their own bills in the last few hours. So we couldn't get them in the packets. The packets were put together last night. So if you didn't amendment today, are there a lot? We could just. On federal conformity, I guess we could just pass them all out. Are there any others? No, I guess that's it. So, okay, so do you want to vote on that again, having looked at that one? Is that Representative Anderson?
Aye, Madam Chair.
Okay, so all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted. And then we'll lay House File 1957 over for future consideration. Okay. So the next one on the agenda is Representative Loeffler. Is she
Thank
here?
Thank you, Madam
oh,
Chair.
Oh, there you are.
And House Bill 2024 does federal conformity on the deduction for higher education tuition expenses. This is one that we have done many years and with bipartisan support. What it provides is that higher education tuition expenses are deductible. The deduction is up to $4,000 if your adjusted gross income is up to $65,000 if you're a single filer, and $130,000 joint filing, and up to $2,000 for those who fall within the range of $65,000 to $80,000 singly applying, and $130,000 to $160,000 joint filers. And so it's a good way to help our families support the tuition expenses. And so I would like to move this for possible consideration and inclusion.
Okay, so to get the bill before us, Representative Loeffler has moved the bill. Do you have any amendments?
No, I don't, Madam
Okay,
Chair.
So questions on for Representative Loeffler? Otherwise, we'll hold testimony on hers as well till we're through them all. I think every single bill that individual members are carrying is a provision in either the bill I'm carrying or Representative David's. I don't think there's any separate bills. And Representative Drazkowski, I think, has them, too. And maybe Representative Anderson, too. I'm not sure. But most of these smaller provisions are all in other bills. Okay, discussion. We're going to lay this over. We have to take the vote to move it here. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. The bill is before us, and now I'll lay it over for possible consideration. Okay, so thank you, Representative Loeffler. And next is Representative Norton. First person who's not on the committee. Welcome, Representative Norton. And would someone like to move Representative Norton's bill for
Madam her? Chair, I will.
Representative Davids moves House File 2002 before the committee. And do you have any amendments, Representative Norton?
I have no amendments, but I do have a constituent and his family here, and so I don't know how you're going to handle that. But
well, we'll let them hang on until we get through. We're almost through them all, and then we're going to take testimony on all of them.
Okay.
And we do want to hear from your testifiers, even the audible ones that we're listening to.
Yeah.
So. Representative Norton, welcome to the committee. Please tell us about your bill.
Sure. The bill before you today is House File 2002, and it's not new for this committee. In fact, I believe you passed it last year. But I'm asking you to revisit last year's conference committee decision and ultimate body decision regarding federal conformity to the adoption law. I am also requesting a retroactive 2011 tax year date. So that families who have had employee assistance this year and are just getting ready to file their taxes might be able to have a break that they had counted on. And my constituent can talk to that when he comes up. I think you know the bill. I don't know that I need to say any more. This is important for some of you. We all have businesses probably that do this. Mayo Clinic is one of the businesses in my community that helps their employees with adoptions. And so a lot of the families I heard from there's one of them, were Mayo employees. And so I you can hear his story in a little while.
Great.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Davids.
Representative Norton, did you say retroactive 2011?
No, the 2013 tax year.
Okay.
Or the 2013
thought
tax
year. I thought you said 11 in there. Thank you. You did.
Okay. We're going to vote on this one to have it that we've heard it. And so all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. The bill is before us, and we're going to now lay this over for future consideration. And we'll get back to testimony in a minute. We're getting close here. Thank you, Representative Norton. Please stay with us. And now Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll move House File 1959.
Okay, so all those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. The bill's before us. And Representative Davids, you have an amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have the A1 amendment. A1 amendment. I'll move the A1 amendment.
Representative Davids moves the A1. Does everyone have that? Mm-hmm. Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. The amendment's adopted. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. If I could have maybe Nina Manzi from House Research describe how mine's just a little different now than the chair's. If you could just describe for the committee the actual differences.
Ms. Manzi.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the difference between House File 1959 with its amendment and Representative Lincheski's House File 2106 with the two amendments that are adopted is that 1959 would conform to the standard deduction for married filers and to the dependent care credit changes retroactively to tax year 2013, and House File 2106 would not conform to those provisions until 2014. And I think that's the only difference with regard to the conformity items.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, so we're going to lay this one over for future consideration. Thank you, Representative Davids.
Thank you.
Next, we have Representative Garofalo. Is he here? Would someone want to move his bill for him? I mean, so we can make sure we heard it. And thank you. Representative Loon moves House File 1969 for consideration. It's the Federal Adoption Assistance Tax Exclusion Conform to. Ms. Manzi, is there an amendment on this one? Does anyone know? I don't think so. No. Okay. Ms. Manzi, can we just have you tell us, is this the same bill that Representative Norton has, basically? Ms. Manzi.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes, this bill is the same as Representative Norton's House File 2002.
Okay, great. So I think we understand that one, and all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. And we will now lay over Representative Garofalo's bill for future consideration. And I think that's it.
You have one.
Oh, 1777. I think I'll wait on that, and then... Oh, Representative Anderson has one. Did I miss that? I don't see it. Is it on the...
2014.
Okay, I think... Yes, we have Representative Drazkowski and I, and I think Davids and Anderson all have bills that combine federal conformity and business-to-business repeals, and I thought we would do them separately. Unless you prefer to move them now. That's kind of how we order. These were hard to group because so many members are doing a lot of different things, and we were hoping to just hear testimony on federal conformity first before we go to business, but I'm, you know, however the committee wants to do it. That's why they're in the bill, the order and the agenda that they're in. Where is Anderson? Oh, yes, I see it down there. No, that's not it. Representative Anderson, do you have two bills or one?
Madam Chair, I would understand that it was just the one bill, but I didn't get notification, so I'm not sure if there's other.
Yeah, I see.
If there are, I'm more than happy to speak to those.
I think I see it now, 2014. I think we'll just continue. I think that's all the standalone federal conformity bills. Is that wrong? Okay. Okay, so that's good. They're all here in front of the committee, and we would now like to take public testimony on federal conformity. And I think, Representative Norton, you might want to get that beautiful child up here first. And anyone else who wants to talk on federal conformity, please come down.
Madam Chair, they had to go out and get the baby.
Here they come.
I'm afraid she was being disruptive. So I will just introduce Aaron Norman and his family, and they're from Rochester, and they will tell you their story.
Great. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
And if you can just tell us your names and we want to hear your thoughts on Representative Norton and Representative Garofalo's bill. He's carrying the same bill as well.
My name is Aaron Norman, and I'm from Rochester, Minnesota.
I'm Christy Norman, and this is Hattie.
Well, Representative Lencheski and members of the House Tax Committee, thank you so much for the opportunity to address this issue on taxation on employer-provided adoption of benefits today. I'll tell you our story, and if you have any questions afterwards, please let me know. In January 2013, we were blessed to be chosen as the forever family for our daughter, Hattie. The adoption of our daughter was truly a miraculous process, and from a financial perspective, was largely made possible from the assistance provided by my employer, Mayo Clinic. As Mayo recognizes the difficulty in handling large expenses incurred from adoptions, they have provided a benefit that allows for up to $10,000 in reimbursement for eligible adoption expenses, such as a home study, agency placement fees, and legal fees. Since the entire process for our daughter's adoption came to nearly $20,000, this assistance is what really made adoption affordable for our family. And as it is important for our family to have my wife be at home to care for our children, My salary is the only income. And without Mayo's assistance, the adoption expenses would have been more than one-third of my gross annual income, making the cost nearly impossible to handle otherwise. In July 2013, I was notified by my employer that Minnesota's legislature decided not to match the federal extension of the tax-free adoption assistance benefit. This was made retroactive to January 1st, meaning that the reimbursement we received was now a taxable reimbursement and subject to state income tax. Since we had received a full $10,000 in reimbursement monies, this equated to us being responsible for over $700 in new taxes. Effectively, this was a creation of $700 in new adoption expenses that was being instituted by the state. Considering that we were still trying to recover from the non-reimbursed adoption expenses, this new tax was a shock and something we knew was going to create additional financial hardship come tax time. More so, we were very concerned that this new tax would discourage other families from adopting, since the costs involved with adoption are already one of the main reasons families don't choose adoption. In our opinion, it is one of the state's primary duties to help care for the safety and security of children. One of the ways that the state can do this is by encouraging adoption in any way possible to help promote children being in a forever home with stable parents. When adoption reimbursement benefits from one's employer are taxed by the state, this discourages adoption. To look at this from a more traditional standpoint in child rearing, imagine if the reimbursement monies paid by a health insurer for biological births were taxed as if they were income. Therefore, why should adoptions be treated differently in having reimbursement money taxed? Please note that we and others like us are not asking that the state give us any money for an adoption in the form of a refund or a credit, but to simply consider adoption assistance money as being tax exempt. Many families like ours who have adopted have enthusiastically sacrificed our savings accounts, borrowed money from family members, hold garage sales, withhold putting money in retirement accounts, and put on fundraisers in order to make adoptions work. We simply ask that the state not consider adoption reimbursement monies as a source of revenue. Thus, can you please support the passing of HF 2002, authored by Representative Norton, which will make these monies permanently tax exempt? Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for the Normans? Or Hattie?
She'd be happy to answer any.
Thank you so much for being here. We appreciate it. Further testimony on any and all of the federal conformity bills. Please. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Welcome. Brian Rushi, Joint Religious Legislative Coalition. A wise ex-legislator once said the purpose of government is to promote caring relationships. So following that, here I am to talk about the federal conformity provisions that will eliminate the marriage penalty and strengthen the working family credit. And have a letter that I'd like the page to distribute.
Sure.
Thank you. Yes. The main thing is we just want to make sure that one of the main features of our working family credit, which is alignment with the federal earned income tax credit, is maintained. So from an outreach perspective, we can say to all the taxpayers in Minnesota, if you're eligible for this, boom, working family credit is something that you should pursue. We don't want to lose that. I think that's really important. And then also just want to, again, underscore the importance of making sure that we don't financially disadvantage married people in our tax code. Just think that. And I want to recognize that you also have a letter in your packet from the Minnesota Catholic Conference, one of our sponsors, to that point as well. And then I've lost a little bit in terms of the amendments and effective dates on the working family credit. I know Representative David's bill was looking at tax year 2013. Want to say that we appreciate that and hope that you can expedite it because sooner's better. Thank you.
Yeah, and Mr. Rushi, I think we'll just double check. Ms. Manzi, I think we've got. Where did? And I think Representative Davids has that now, and I have that as well. Retro to 2013.
Okay.
Can you comment on some of the bills that are combining business to business taxes? Do any of those have that as well? I don't know. Representative Drazkowski might have had that in his.
Madam Chair, of the bills that combine things, it's only Representative Anderson's bill that has both federal conformity and the business-to-business provisions. Representative Drazkowski's bill, I think, has some other things in it besides business-to-business, but not federal conformity. And Representative Anderson's House File 2014 also would match the extension in the phase-out in the working family credit to what's in effect at the federal level for the earned income credit starting in tax year 2013.
Okay. Great. So that kind of answers that, Mr. Rushi.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And you know, Mr. Rushi, just you're a good person, or Ms. Matting, to remind people about what the Working Family Credit is. We don't spend a lot of time on it on this committee, and it's really, you know, how it came to be really from some presidents, but maybe you can just speak to that, because often to see the Joint Religious Legislative Conference and, you know, the letter from the Minnesota Catholic Conference, and, you know, this is something that has been very bipartisan in the legislature for a very long time. Maybe you can just, for people who are listening, talk a little bit about what it is.
Yeah, refundable tax credits, known as the Earned Income Tax Credit at the federal level, and Minnesota's Working Family Credit has been one of the most important anti-poverty tools that we have in this nation. It has enjoyed bipartisan support through its history, both at congressional and here at the state legislature. We were very happy to be one of the states that piggybacked on the federal EITC pretty early on. So Minnesota should take pride in this very important tool to make family earnings go further. It rewards work, and it's one of the most important, like I said, you look at the academic literature and the poverty experts, and almost everybody agrees the two biggest levers you want to be on is minimum wage and refundable tax credits. And you can move the needle on poverty, and this is the one that really rewards work.
Thank you. Yep. Appreciate that. Ms. Madden, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I am going to echo much of what Mr. Rushi said, without repeating him, if I can. Testifying today in support of the federal conformity provision on working family credit, really appreciate the effort to include the 2013 effective date. And I'm testifying today not only representing myself as director of the Minnesota Budget Project, but a coalition of organizations who support this position, which includes Accountability Minnesota, the Amherst H. Wilder Foundation, Take Action Minnesota, and the Minnesota Community Action Partnership. We really appreciate the bipartisan support for this position. It really will make the tax code simpler for many Minnesota families. Nearly 54,000 Minnesota working families headed by married couples would benefit. As Mr. Rushi said, there's about 25 states like Minnesota who has a state credit modeled on the federal earned income tax credit, which is designed to promote and encourage work. It is only available to families that work, and it offsets a portion of the taxes that those families pay. The federal government has acted to address the marriage penalties that exist in the earned income tax credit, and we have from time to time conformed to those provisions, and we feel like now with Minnesota in a stronger financial position, it's time for us to fully conform. And it's really a small investment we can make that'll make a big difference for Minnesota families and make the tax code simpler. So thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Madden. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, my name is Ryan Hamilton. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for the Minnesota Association of Realtors. The Minnesota Realtors have a longstanding position in support of federal conformity and passing tax relief adopted at the federal level on to Minnesota taxpayers. So with that in mind, and on behalf of our 16,000-plus members and the countless homeowners and aspiring homeowners they represent, we're pleased to offer our support for the several conformity bills that are before the committee today, specifically those that would provide retroactive income tax relief for canceled mortgage debt and a deduction for the mortgage insurance premiums. Madam Chair, I caught part of your interview yesterday on NPR. You're very eloquent in describing how the situations where conformity comes into play and the impact it has on taxpayers. So I don't think I have to do a lot of selling here. I'll cut it short and just say thank you for addressing this issue timely. Thank you, Representative Davids, for your bill. Thank you, Representative Earhart, for your bill. And the amendment you just offered, that's a great amendment. It'll make this relief permanent. The governor's quote was a great quote. But I'd also like to add that the average short sale price in 2013 was $136,000, and the average foreclosure price was $122,000. So, the governor's quote was in the $600,000 range, but this is actually also the group that this relief will be impacting. So it's across the board. I think I covered everyone that I need to think. Representative Anderson, thank you for your bill. And with that, I'll close.
Thank you, Mr. Hamilton. Thanks for your words. It really highlights how very bipartisan these issues are, so appreciate it. Thank you so much. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Todd Koch. I'm a certified public accountant and a partner of the firm John A. Knutson & Company in glorious Falcon Heights, Minnesota. What I'm here to talk about is I appreciate you looking at conformity as early in the session. Session starts today, and you're looking at it. That's great. because 29% of all tax returns have already been filed. And that should be counting as the people in my office are filing returns as we speak. The earlier you could do it, the better. If you wait till later, what's going to happen is either, A, they're going to have to pay people like me to fix it, and that costs them money, and an increased cost of compliance is the same thing as a tax increase. Or revenue is going to have to fix it, and they're going to have to reprogram their computer systems, and they're going to have to be funded for that, and that costs money. So if you can make the decisions as early as possible, it would really help the greatest number of people in the shortest amount of time. That's really important. I want to point out a couple things that some of these conformity issues run into. I'm glad you're talking about the home mortgage one, because that impacts people at a very difficult time. If they had the money to pay the tax, they'd probably still be in their house. There's two other issues that show how a minor thing can create a whole kerfuffle of complexity. You can end up with a situation when you add back some of these other items to adjusted gross income where now you may not have a deductible IRA. That means you're going to have to add back this this deduction to your Minnesota income, and now you have a difference in your Minnesota IRA than your federal IRA. Who's going to remember to ask dead Aunt Emil if she has a difference in her Minnesota and federal IRA balance? Who's going to remember to look at this 20 years from now when she started to take her money out? The answers to anyone actually remembering this are slim and none. It's hard enough to remember on your own return, let alone some decedent's return. And you guys have properly and graciously addressed this in the past when we've had some differences and allowed people to fix this in response to these changes. It'd be great if you could make it so these type of things don't happen going forward. We have another circumstance. I had this, one of my clients, they fit in with the difference of class lives for property. So they fixed up a building. Good for them. And they built it out for the tenant. So for the tenant, half of what they put into that building, they get to write off up front. And Minnesota has a process for doing this differently from Minnesota. Add back 80%, take the rest over time. The other half of the same asset has to be calculated on the difference of 15 years versus 39. Now, I have to calculate that difference for 39 years for the same asset. Two different ways, same asset. Oh, by the way, the difference for this client was $117.34. Now, that will double next year to $228, making a difference of $20 to that person's tax. I'll let you know right now, I'm charging them a lot more than $20 to figure out there's a $20 difference. But we have to do it right, and I know that Minnesota Revenue can find out if I am or am not complying with the law, because you look for the right code on the 4562, you can identify who's using these provisions. So to prevent the notice from coming back down the road, I'm doing this. But can you imagine the discussion I'm having with my taxpayer when I explained to him that he just got charged multiples of what the tax collections are to comply with this law. And for the end, by the way, he's going to do it each and every year from now until he either rebuilds that place for another tenant, sells it, or just sells his entity. It is just a great compliance burden. I'm probably one of the few people you're going to hear that ask to be paid less, not more. If you can get it so I can charge my clients less to comply with the rules, it's great, because if you have a client that understands the rules, they can comply with the rules, and they may perceive that the rules are fair, they're a much more compliant taxpayer, and they tend to stick around longer. Longer, I'm talking about in the state of Minnesota, because the more that you get these complexities, the more perceived unfairness, and then that's the type of people, when they perceive taxes are unfair, when they look now to moving outside the state of Minnesota. So the more we can keep the situation as simple as possible, to make it as fair as possible, and make it as easy to comply with, I really applaud you, and please do it earlier than later. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Before you start, Ms. Cadoon, I just want to ask Mr. Michael, not on the depreciation schedules, but the IRA issue that the last testifier was just talking about. Can you, I think Representative Davids and I are both addressing that in our bill, I'm pretty sure. And can you just talk a little bit more about that for the committee, just to, you know, how we might all think about what that person who is in that situation has to go through right now if we don't pass this bill?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, as Mr. Koch pointed out, your ability to take a deduction for individual retirement account contribution is for somebody who's covered by a pension plan is phased out based on income. And some of these conformity items affect calculation of adjusted gross income, which is the measure that phases out your eligibility to take these contribution deductions. And so when we did not conform to some of these things that affect how much AGI you have, like the educator's expense deduction, the above-the-line student the loan interest deduction, that will affect whether you qualify to take an IRA deduction. And obviously, you know, somebody with a student loan deduction, for example, you can presume that that's probably a younger person. And so it may be a long time before they ever get around to withdrawing money from their IRA. And as Mr. Koch points out, if we actually do not allow them to deduct that, then they would have sort of what we would call a basis in that IRA that is post-tax income, not pre-tax income, that they should be allowed to recover and not pay tax on it again, because we taxed them when they made the contribution. And so that's why you would have to, if you followed through and just kept doing this, you would have to keep track of that for, you know, maybe 30, 40 years potentially before that money comes out of the IRA. And the tax that's at issue is fairly trivial, but the record keeping and compliance costs are very high.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I think just one more reminder why these things are so important for everyday Minnesotans. Ms. Cadoon, welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Beth Cadoon. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, an organization of 2,300 businesses across the state of Minnesota. I want to thank Madam Chair and all the legislators on a bipartisan basis that are authoring bills to do federal conformity. We are in strong support of those bills. We believe federal conformity is an important part of our tax system. It was a policy decision made, I think, decades ago, in order to go with the federal tax code as much as possible, and that was done in order to really reduce the compliance burden, the complexity, and the cost, both for taxpayers as well as the Department of Revenue on tax compliance. Only about 7 million of these provisions really directly impact businesses, but the ones that do are they add greatly to the complexity and administrative burden of doing these taxes. For example, on the depreciation schedules, if you do not conform, it's not just 1 year of an adjustment. This is 15 to 39 years of differences between the federal and the state on depreciation schedules, where they need to keep different sets of books and then adjust their taxes accordingly. There's also some employer-provided benefits that we think are very important to adopt as well, and that was some that testimony you already heard on the adoption provisions, the tuition reimbursement. We think those are very important. These are benefits that employees are going to be surprised when they file their tax returns to find out that they owe tax in Minnesota. That's not taxable at the federal level, and they will be surprised because typically we've conformed to these items in the past. In addition, this lack of conformity on those types of benefits also add greatly to the administrative burden for those employers providing that assistance. They've had to communicate those changes to their employees. They've had to adjust their tax forms, the payroll forms, etc., which adds a lot to the administrative cost burden. So just in general, just want to say thank you for moving this bill as long as quickly as you can. We're really urging an early tax bill, not only to address the federal conformity issue, but also to address the business-to-business taxes that we'll be talking about in a little bit. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Further testifiers for or against any provisions in these federal conformity bills, and, of course, including Representative Anderson's as well, which we'll be taking up. If not, I think we've covered all that. So we're going to move then to the business-to-business tax cluster, and I think we'll start with the warehousing group, and to the page, Mr. Beltrandi. We have, which I kind of wish we would have done this in federal conformity, we have a spreadsheet on all these bills to help all members that Ms. Dalton put together, kind of who's got what in the bills and are they retro and do they have refunds and all that. So if we can get that passed out to everyone, I think that would be helpful. Okay, great. Okay, so with that, the first bill, where are we here? We're going to go to Representative Halverson. Is she here?
She is.
I don't see her. Oh, there she is. Would someone move for Representative Halverson, House File 1896?
Madam Chair, so moved.
Yes, thank you. Representative Loeffler moves House File 1896, and I don't think there's an amendment on that one. Is there, Representative Halverson? No. Okay, so we're going to go to that one. We're going to have Ms. Dalton join us, too, for all the committee members to talk about all these bills. And I think, Representative Halverson, you don't have one of these, but when the committee does, we'll get one to you, too. These are all the business-to-business bills we're looking at, and we're going to start with yours first, but you're on here somewhere. Yes. Okay. So Representative Loeffler has moved House File 1896, and the bill is before us. Welcome, Representative Halverson. Please.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. This bill is to repeal the sales tax on storage and warehouse services. This issue has been a big part of my life since the end of last session and throughout the summer. Anybody who's flown over Eagan, Minnesota has seen our flat roofs in my community and know why this is of particular interest to me. I've met with numerous employers in my district, business owners both large and small, and learned a lot about how this particular tax is going to impact and is impacting their business, even though it hasn't taken effect yet. As you all know, the effective date in statute is April 1st, and so I really am grateful to the chair for hearing this bill on the first day of session so that we can address this early. And I do know that there are some members of the community that are here and available to testify on the bill.
Okay, thank you. Representative Halverson, we're going to wait and have them testify on all of them, because if members look at the spreadsheet, I think we have a few more bills on this item. So we should have voted to put the bill in front of us. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. The bill is before us, and we're going to now lay this over for future consideration. But if you can stay, we will get to the testimony on all of these. And next we're going to call up House File 1877. I don't know if Representative Isaacson is here. I know he had other things. Oh, here he comes right now. If someone would like to move Representative Isaacson's bill, it's House File 1877, to put it before the committee.
I'll
move. So Representative Simonson moves House File 1877. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. The bill's before us. And Representative Isaacson, I know you've had other committees as well. We're just going to get your two-minute spiel on what this bill is for, and we're going to lay it over, and then we're going to take testimony on all the bills. So welcome to the committee.
I need to know. I'm sorry. Which one are we looking at?
Your
I have three
House
of them.
File 1877, warehouse tax repeal, storage and warehouse tax repeal.
Yep. I'm going to be really brief because I know you're hearing the same argument over and over again. I think we're at a point, if the surplus continues to hold the way we hoped, that we're not going to need it. And I have constituents in my district that have been very vocal about how it's affecting their business life, and I want to see us repeal this, as I don't think it will be necessary to our fiscal health. How about that?
Great. Thank you.
We're
appreciate
good?
Your testimony, and we're going to lay this over for future consideration.
Thank you.
And we will be taking testimony on it.
But
thank you very much. Okay, Representative O'Neill. House File 1968. Would someone like to move that? I see her coming forward.
So
great. So Representative Davids moves House File 1968 to be before the committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. The bill's before us. Do you have any amendments, Representative O'Neill?
I do not.
You do not. Okay, great. Welcome to the committee. Tell us same spiel about your bill, and we will get to testimony once we lay it over. So
thank
welcome.
You, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. This is a bill that we actually talked quite a bit about in the Small Business Caucus. And so Representative Rosenthal and I are chairing the Small Business Caucus of 26 members. And this was the top priority, the three business-to-business taxes. And so this is incredibly important to the state of Minnesota. And we will hear testifiers very shortly as to how critical, because I have heard stories that warehouses are empty and buildings are being built in Iowa. So we really don't want that as... You know, if we're going to be a business-friendly state, we want to really be a business-friendly state. So I think it's really, really important that we repeal this and be effective on March 31st before it's actually enacted, because it's a real cost to business. If it's enacted and repealed after the effect, then that's a huge cost to business, and they've already incurred quite a shift in their business. And you'll hear some testimony coming forward from several people, but this is a dramatic and an instant change in how business is done here in Minnesota, and I would implore you to repeal this as quickly as possible. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony, Representative O'Neill. Unless there are questions. Oh, Representative Garofalo is going to...
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, it's actually not for the author of the bill or the bill itself. It's for you. Why are we voting on moving bills?
I asked Ms. Kunis that. Am I doing this wrong? Do we need to be voting to get these before us? I couldn't quite remember. That's what the interim does to us. I guess we don't need to.
Okay.
I mean, we're not voting. We're not voting on to have the bills leave committee. Yeah, you're ruining that bipartisan thing right now, Representative Garofalo.
Well, I'll have a motion on the House floor to suspend the rules on Thursday then and take up one of these bills and pass it over to the Senate then. It'll be all bipartisan. Does that sound fair?
I thought that was going to happen today. Just kidding. And, you know, I guess I don't know that we need to be doing that, but I think all authors want to feel their bills actually got heard. So that's kind of how we do it. So. Anyway, thank you. And Representative O'Neill, thank you for being here, and thank you for your work on the Small Business Caucus. I have not been able to attend those, but I've heard a great deal about it. So thanks for all that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's see. So we'll lay that over for future consideration. And now we have Representative Kelly. Is he here? Is Representative Kelly here? We can, I don't know if someone's going out to get him. If we can go to the next person, and then someone's going to get him. How about if we do that, and Representative Quam is here. Nice, and here's Representative Kelly, too. Come on down, both of you. Might as well. You were actually first, but I think we're at the same spot. So, Representative Kelly, welcome to the committee. And I don't know if you know what we're doing here. We're just moving your bills, having you tell us what they are, and then we're going to have testimony on all of these repeals as a group. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I appreciate you taking the time to hear it. I was just over in the Energy Committee. As you are probably aware, this bill was one that I had up in a special session, and I know as we ended last session, none of us were really excited about this warehouse bill, and I've got specific constituents in my area. Everyone knows the Red Wing Shoe Store or Red Wing Shoe Company, Lawrence Transportation Company. They both were up here with me with very grave concerns. And I think it's unfortunate that we didn't do something about this back in May when the Senate decided that they were going to control what the House does. But I guess regardless, we're here now today, and this is a bill that we need to pass, because it has immediately stopped business. It stopped business back in May. Everything's on hold, and this is business. This is jobs. This is tax revenue to the state that we missed out on the last 9 months. So. Unfortunately, with the timing, and I understood you talked about the timing of notification here. I did not have time for anyone to be prepared to come up here to talk to the group. They would have enjoyed that as well. I think that's unfortunate from a process standpoint. But as we move forward, I guess I do have a question, Madam Chair, just on process, because I understand that we have several bills that are now asking to repeal the warehouse tax. And in fact, my senator from Red Wing has got the Yellow Jackets over in the Senate, so I called him up the other day and said, well, I'll just take those green jackets, and now this was the bill I initially had. So I'm just curious as how this is all being put together, and which bills are we actually going to pass, since there's so many of them are similar. What's the process here?
Well, first, to talk about your testifiers, there will be a lot of people testifying to your bill, even though you weren't able to get someone due to the noticing, and I apologize for that. But we do have a lot of people in the room who are going to testify in support of your bill and your colleagues bipartisanly are carrying the same bill. As to the process, you know, I feel the same as the authors who've been speaking bipartisanly in the room. I would like to address these items early. You know, does the whole legislature feel like they're ready for that yet? I mean, I'm thrilled the governor has been very clear. He would like to see us move on these business-to-business repeals and federal conformity. And I think the House bipartisanly is quite aligned on that. But I think, you know, we all have caucuses that we need to talk about if we should take action on this. We understand there's a time crunch. You know, in my experience, and I've been fortunate to serve under many tax chairs, and I've mostly spent the time I've been here in the minority. The majority of the time I have been here, I've been a minority member. And I have watched bipartisanly numerous tax chairs pass federal conformity, and it's only been, you know, recently that there's been issues around federal conformity, and then now something like B2B. Generally, if there can be an early tax bill that people can get their heads around, it's a broad agreement with four caucuses. We saw that today. We watched Representative Radinovich and many people in Greater Minnesota talk to us about how important that propane bill was, and we had four caucuses come together around those provisions. And so I would hope we could get there very quickly. That's my hope. You know, I know that all 201 of us have different opinions about what is the most important and when, but I won't go out on a limb and say for sure this will happen on this day, but I think people should anticipate that there's a reason these bills are scheduled today, and that many people, and the testimony demonstrates today, people are very bipartisan, and with a surplus, I think people are feeling the need to begin to address these things as early as possible. But I, you know, I'm not in a position to tell you a date. I can only speak for me as a person. I would like to have early action on some of these items. But again, with broad understanding and agreement from folks that, you know, it doesn't become a political football out there, and we're all just, we really didn't change anything. So that's my thought. Representative Davids, I see you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to, I think the procedure would be to move each bill so it's before us, and then we lay it over for possible inclusion. But what we were doing was also voting on it, which is fine. I mean, I like to vote. So I would, I don't think House File 1908 is actually before us, so I'd like to move House File 1908 so we're discussing it while it's before us.
Great. So Representative Davids moves the bill for Representative Kelly, so it is before us.
And Madam Chair, I would like to echo your comments, and I'm hoping, as we did on the bill today, as the four caucuses came together, I just want you to know right now, before the whole public in the world, that if we could put together a tax conformity bill and the B&B repeals, now I'm not authorized by my leadership to be saying this, but I'm going to, being the senior member of my caucus, I'm going to do it anyways. I have a pen and a phone. So, with that being said, if there's some way, and I'm out of my authorizing environment right now, just to be right up front, that we could get a, now I was asked by the press quite a bit today, well, if you don't get everything you want, Representative Davids, in your conformity bill, will you support it? And I said, well, I said, if it's substantial, I think I would. If it's, it doesn't have to be every provision. I'm not going to take my toys and go home. But this is a very important issue, and if we can get a bipartisan bill put together, I'll be down in my leadership corner saying, let's do this. Let's rock and roll. Let's go. And so that's what my position is on this, that if we can get a substantial bill, get some B&B repeals, and with the understanding that we have to fight off members on both sides of the aisle from all their good tax provisions that they would want on this. That's the tough part about being tax chair. Anytime you put a bill out there that has tax on it, watch out, because it's coming at you. And hopefully we could work together on that, because I'd really like to see these provisions be passed early. And that's not a caucus position, that's my position.
Yes, I appreciate that. And Representative Kelly, you know, you've asked the question, and Representative Davids and I feel very similar. I'm carrying the bill that he just recommended, which is all the federal conformity combined with all the business-to-business repeals plus refunds. So that's how I personally feel. Same situation. You know, we have a whole caucus, and you have a whole caucus, and everybody doesn't agree on everything, and the governor has come out very favorably on all of those items, and we have yet to hear kind of where the Senate might be on this, but for things to be successful around here, we do all have to talk to each other, and we all showed up today. So I do think part of it, as Representative Davids said, is not only talking to our colleagues in our party, but our Senate colleagues. on our the opposite side of the aisle. But, you know, we do have to remember that part of the problem becomes the amendment game. And so if people are very serious about quick activity, you know, getting together to do something quickly without all the other things is a big part of it. And I think that's where all caucuses have to have a conversation. So.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate that input, and Representative Davids as well. And I guess maybe that's where I'll leave you with my comments, is that to the degree that I can help expedite this process, this has nothing to do with, for me, who gets credit for the bill. If it helps that I withdraw my bill or table my bill, what I would like, I mean, we have several of the bills saying the same thing. Mm-hmm. So instead of adding to the surplus of bills and paperwork and processing, instead of passing it through to go on to this committee and next committee and next committee, I'll take your advice on the process of where we go, because I'll gladly sign on to Representative Halverson's bill if that's one that's going to move. So that's really where I'm at today, and I'll take your advice on what we should do with this bill.
Well, I think procedurally the committee will put together a bill. I don't think we'll see all these bills move. It's, you know, ideally there would be one bill that this committee bipartisanly would work on to send to the body of the whole on the floor. And, you know, it would carry multiple provisions, but I think Representative Davids is right. When people are, you know, going to go to the wall for their own personal thing, that makes it harder. And so packaging it is the trick, and that's the work of this committee. So you might want to get on the tax committee someday. It's fun. Trying to get things all through this group sometimes is a trick, but we'd like to try.
Well, with that then, Madam Chair and committee members, I appreciate the time. And I would ask that it would be, well, that's not for me to decide here, but thank you for your time, and I've taken up enough of it. Appreciate it.
Great. Thank you for being here. Appreciate it. Will someone move Representative Quam's bill? Let's see. That's,
we have Madam Chair, I'd move House File 2121.
Thank you, Representative Drazkowski. Welcome to the committee. Nice to see you again.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is the same bill that Senator St. Jim and I introduced for the special session, and is appropriate we talk about it today because we heard on the floor some discussion if we had some state or local storage of propane that would help. If you look at the history of warehouse and storage taxes, California got rid of it because they were having a rail yard just out of the state, Nevada, where goods were being stored outside the state to avoid this tax, and they were having spot shortages and increases in prices on products, goods, and commodities. And so I think we already have a close example of what a shortage locally did in one area, and so I think that's another good reason to pass one of the bills that gets rid of the storage and warehouse tax. And thank you.
Great. Thank you so much. I think the individual bills on the warehouse tax are now done. I want to just say for the record, Representative Drazkowski, if you look on the spreadsheet, Representative Zellers, Representative Lincheski, Wills, Scott, Anderson, and I think that's all of them, also have bills to repeal the warehouse tax in bills that we haven't yet gotten to because they carry multiple issues. So just know that. So we now want to take testimony from anybody who's here to talk to us about repealing the storage and warehouse business-to-business tax. But again, even though you heard all those authors, there are many more authors bipartisanly who are carrying bills on that who are sitting here at the table right now, number of tax committee members. Nice to see you again. Welcome.
Good to see you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kathy Forrester, and I run Strategic Warehousing, and I co-chair the Minnesota Warehouse Association. Our little company, Strategic Warehousing, is a small warehousing company, and we own and operate and lease about 700,000 square feet of warehouse space, specifically a lot in the Eagan area, and unfortunately in Iowa today. Back last spring when the bill was passed, immediately our largest customer, and we store empty pop cans. They said they could not absorb this tax. So as our industry is only a 3-6% profitability at best, can you imagine a 6 or 7% tax, and somehow who's going to absorb this? That being said, what happened to us is this. Our customer came to me and said, well, we have a customer down in Iowa. Would you guys be willing to open up a warehouse operation in Iowa? Absolutely. So at that being said, August the 1st, we opened up a warehouse operation in Ames, Iowa, which is 3 hours south of Eagan, Minnesota, a straight shot for a truck. Our customer immediately upon us opening up the warehouse diverted 8 loads a day, which equates to 4,500 pallets a month, 180 trucks within 1 month were up and going in Iowa. This has resulted, at least in 2013, and only knows what could happen in 2014, is we have seen a 10% decrease in revenue, and we have laid off 18% of our workforce. Let me talk a little bit about our workforce, our employees. These employees that we employ, I've been in the business for 33 years. I didn't start out in this business, but I love it. That being said, many of these employees that we employ, they have GED. They maybe have a couple years of college. They come in, we employ them. They learn how to operate a forklift. They learn how to pick a case. Eventually, they get moved up to warehousing positions, and they make a real good wage, a lot higher than minimum wage. And today, those are the employees that we are laying off. We need to get this warehouse tax repeal immediate before April 1st. The effects of this bill has caused us internally with our customers, as I've gone to see them for the past few months, when I go to Tennessee, and that's where one of my customers are, I'm asking, how can I get this space filled up? Because I lost 4,500 pallets, 180 trucks out of my space. How can I have you grow in the space that you're currently in? And they say to me, well, why would I put more warehouse inventory in your warehouse when you have this tax? Illinois, Wisconsin, Iowa, and you're in there. Well, maybe we should put our warehouse stuff in Iowa. Well, we'd like to keep it in Minnesota if we could. So here I sit, and I go to my customers, and I try to let them know that this thing will get repealed because I do feel there's bipartisan support. Because you hear my story, it's real. I can give you the address. We're 500 Ames right in Iowa. So we're at Belleville. We're in Iowa. Finally, we had a study done. The International Warehouse Logistics Association out of Chicago did a study, and they found that Minnesota is very unique to this warehousing services tax. So unique, nobody else charges it. So consequently, all of my counterparts, my competitors, they're getting wooed to Iowa, they're getting wooed to Wisconsin, et cetera, et cetera. Finally, I'll just recap to say that I've been in this business for 33 years. I've lived here in Minnesota my whole life. I employ some family, I employ neighbors, I employ kids that come out of college, going to college, they can work there in the summer, and every one of them know that there is potential jobs if indeed that's the choice that they take as they go into college. As a matter of fact, I had an intern this summer who decided to go to supply chain because he really liked it. It's kind of a secret business that we do. No one knows a lot about it. Finally, though, at the end of the day, all I want to say to everybody here is that I can tell you for sure that right now there are businesses outside Minnesota that want to put their stuff in our warehouses, and they're not going to come here until this thing is repealed. The sooner the better. And that's all I have.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Forster. Nice to see you. Thank you.
Any questions, sir?
Anybody? Representative Anderson, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make sure that I heard you correctly. So you had to lay off 18% of your workforce?
As of this moment, and again, if this does not get repealed, there's nothing coming in the doors, so my space is empty. I'm hanging on to my employees because I feel everybody here is going to get this done so I can start getting more business. And so you are correct, 18%.
And Madam Chair?
Yes, please.
If this does get repealed, will you be able to bring back that whole 18% that were laid off, or I mean, what's the
not immediately, but I can go back to Tennessee, engage my customer to put more goods up here, and they're like in one of my warehouses, they're 30% of it. Let's say I can get them to put another 30%. I can get back these people in Minnesota. What's happened in Iowa has happened. Now, could it be that we could bring that business up here? Well, give me the chance to go back to that customer and entice them to bring it back here. Because I leased a building down there. Right now, I do not own that. So I could get out of that and entice my customer if we can just get this done.
Thank you. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the testifier, thank you very much for your testimony. And now you've been very diplomatic in deciding what happened here. But one of the things we want to do is we want to make sure that future legislators or even current legislators don't replicate or duplicate the mistakes of the past. So I would ask you in a very undiplomatic fashion, what do you have to say to those people who allowed this to become law and who voted for this to become law? What would you say to those people today?
Well, you know what? This is interesting. You know, I went to high school here in Minnesota, and I will say this whole process has been very interesting, but I just think that they didn't know. They didn't know what we did. I don't think they meant it. I just think that we were the sleepy little business, and it was just our industry. And I do say that everybody that I come across, when I explain the story, they go, yeah, I get that. So I don't have any ill will. I would just say that if we tell our story, I think it's just kind of a no-brainer.
Thank you. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the testifier. Well, actually, they did know because we told them. We told them on the floor during the House debate. We said this is what's going to happen. And so now that you know that they actually knew this, that it wasn't a mistake, that they actually knew it was going to cause this damage, does it change your assessment at all, or is it just kind of not that big of a deal?
It's a huge deal, except for I believe I'm a Minnesotan, and I believe if you tell the truth, tell the story, we'll come along, we'll do the right thing. Because it's about the people and the jobs. You know, that's how I look at it. So I'm not going to hold grudges and make all these opinions because it's, you know, water over the dam. I just want to get this thing repealed so we have other things to talk about.
Yeah, my job is to hold grudges, not yours. Okay,
thank you.
And you can do that for me.
Further questions for Ms. Forster? Okay, if not, thank you so much for your testimony and for being here today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Further testimony on the repeal of the storage and warehouse tax. Thank you for being here. Welcome.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Randy Olson. I've been involved with economic development in the state of Minnesota for about 20 years. I'm here today to represent actually the Red Wing Port Authority. I'm sorry I didn't have a chance to talk to Representative Kelly about my testimony. The Port Authority is, as you might know, is the city's economic development agency, and then we also manage commercial shipping and recreational boating activities along the Mississippi River as it flows through the city of Red Wing. The city of Red Wing is home to 37 manufacturers that employ about 8,000 people, and many of those people come from not only southeastern Minnesota but from western Wisconsin. These businesses transport and they store materials for their manufacturing processes, and many of them store their products right in the city of Red Wing. Adding the state sales tax to this service will fundamentally change the business economics for these companies. It places Minnesota at a competitive disadvantage. I'm saying a lot of things that will be said already. The other hat that I wear is that the Red Wing Port Authority is a member of the Minnesota Ports Association, which includes the port authorities of Winona, Duluth, and St. Paul. And all of us have active warehousing and storage facilities in our management of waterways and lakes. There are numerous examples of private companies operating warehouses or bulk storage facilities at our ports, which transship inbound, outbound cargo of commodities and also finished goods. So as we look at this ongoing trend within businesses to trim costs, it's counterintuitive to add this warehousing tax, and it makes Minnesota operations relatively less attractive and similar operations across the river, in particular Wisconsin become more attractive. This added state sales tax will become a difference maker in a highly competitive marketplace, and it's a difference that will not favor our state. So I thank you for the opportunity to testify and for your consideration to repeal this sales tax or warehouse tax. Thank you.
Thank you for being here, Mr. Olson, and I'll try to let Representative Kelly know you were here.
So. I'm going to talk to him as well.
So okay, thank you very much. Appreciate it very much. A further testimony on the storage and warehouse tax. Welcome.
Thank you. My name's John Turner. I'm VP of Product Fulfillment
with a company in Greenfield, Minnesota called Skybridge Americas. Our catchment area for employees there is the Buffalo, Medina, Maple Lake, Maple Plain neighborhood. Skybridge has been around in one form or fashion for over 30 years, originally part of Carlson Marketing and then Gage Marketing and then Archway Marketing. Now, we have two parts of our business. We have Contact Center, where we have over 150 agents here in Minnesota, and we have a large contact center as well in Winnipeg with in excess of 400 agents. And at this moment, we have been transitioning some of those agents from Winnipeg to the facility in Greenfield. Our lease in Greenfield expires in September. So with this tax in, hanging over us, it's the second part of the business that I represent where we're doing product fulfillment for about a dozen clients, some of them national, my Coke Rewards, the loyalty program for the company down in Atlanta, and some local-based companies. And a lot of our services, unlike Kathy, it's not about the warehousing. Only about 20% of our revenue comes from the warehousing element. The rest comes from the other warehouse services, which are also, I believe, covered by this bill. The pick, pack, ship. The fulfillment direct to consumer and to retail and to distribution companies around the U.S. and Canada primarily. So as you apply this tax, we become uncompetitive with national and local fulfillment, third-party logistic companies all around the country, offering the same services that we do at a premium or less the premium that we will now be looking for to retain them in Minnesota. Minnesota is centrally located, but it is not prime for a single warehouse facility. They can take these warehouses to other distribution hubs and reduce their freight expenses and also eliminate this tax. We've relied on our business by giving the service. But in this business climate now, the economics are what are going to dictate the selection of a third-party provider. So we are concerned that we are going to lose business when this is implemented. One of our top three clients has already issued an RFP nationally to competitors looking for alternative pricing. A local company that we're doing business for in Mendota Heights, when we discuss it with them, they want to do business with us, but they're going to look at their options. That is the reaction from every client I have. They are going to review their options. So hopefully I've given you a little bit of the... and one other factor, the 7%, for us to absorb that, that's the majority of our bottom line income in our organization. So for us to continue and lose over 50% of our earnings is not a practical proposition. So as we look at this lease expiry in September, not only are we looking around the Twin Cities for alternatives and renewal with our existing landlord potentially, we're also looking out of state. And I heard Iowa mentioned earlier in the conversation. So hopefully that gives a little bit of color to the concerns we have at Skybridge Americas.
Thank you, Mr. Turner. I think Representative Anderson has a question for you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Turner, can you say the name of your business again?
Skybridge Americas.
And Madam Chair?
Yes, please.
Mr. Turner, you had mentioned that one of your top three clients has already asked for an RFP.
They are Florida-based, yes.
Okay. Have you found that your competitors are using this as a reason to lure your folks away? Do you have any evidence of that? Or
I have no specific evidence of a client coming to me. We went to the clients to communicate the threat of this situation up and coming. So it's a conversation. We're all optimistic, as we've heard again today, that something will get done and it will get repealed. But I've not had a specific client indicate they are ready to move. They are all waiting for the outcome of these deliberations.
And Madam Chair,
yes,
and Mr. Turner, do you have any estimates, since the 7% basically takes the majority of your bottom line, what kind of layoffs are you looking at? Is that something you've thought about? Or
at the moment, our contact center and fulfillment center are one, that in the same facility, and we had been looking to move or to stay as a unity. If we moved the fulfillment center out of state to avoid this tax, we do not know yet what we would do with the contact center. But in my world, I have 30 full-time employees, and seasonally we are using 20 to over 100 temps on any given day. And those temps are not all from that catchment area. We have an agency that buses them in from the cities as well.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Attorney. Appreciate you being here. Welcome to the committee. Please. Yes. Thank you.
Madam Chair, committee, thank you very much for your time. I'll be brief. My name is Steve Yockey. I'm an officer with a company called Distribution Alternatives. We are a 75-year-old employee-owned business based in Lionel Lakes. We have a 300,000-square-foot warehouse in Lionel Lakes. We have about 120 full-time employees in that facility. We service 23 different customers, similar to the stories you've heard from many of my predecessors here. The majority of our customers are not Minnesota-based companies, but keep their products here mainly because of our service. Location is not the prime mover in our industry, and you know, all we're asking for is a level playing field. I think someone asked a question earlier about have your customers been approached by your competitors. Ours have, in a significant number, and it's attractive for them to move out. We're in a small margin business. 7% is a big hit. We have some very large customers that spend seven figures with us on an annual basis, so 7% of that is a pretty significant number. We also have a significant presence in Southern California, which gives us some options. One of our largest Minnesota-based companies is a sporting goods company that actually manufactures 65% of their product in the state of Minnesota. They have already told us if this doesn't get repealed, we won't do it in Minnesota. They have gone through the RFP. They have a deal with a company in Des Moines, Iowa, to move their operation there. They would move product, ironically, product manufactured in the state of Minnesota. They would move it to Iowa to then distribute it around the country, which I find troubling. We also have some options to open some facilities outside of the state of Minnesota within the Midwest to service them. So we have that. But the fact that we've pushed them to even get to that point is they've been with us for 15 years, by the way. Is unfortunate. Most of our other 22 clients, we could move to our, they're in a different position because they manufacture in the state. Most of our clients do not. We could move them to one of our California locations. We have 2 million square feet of warehouse space in Southern California. We don't want to do that. Our company was started by a family. We're still a family-run business. Our founder's son runs our company today. They're from Minnesota. We want to stay in Minnesota. If we had to move our clients out of the state, we would. Unfortunately, most of those 120 full-time employees would not be part of that process, and our owner does not want to do that. We want to stay here. We want to be here. It's just that in the competitive landscape, that doesn't work for us. So I think that's all we're asking for. We're not anti-tax. We understand everybody's got to pay their fair share, but we want to be competitive. And even if half the states charged a warehouse tax, I think we could sell the Minnesota thing enough. But when it's 49-1, that's a tough uphill battle for us. And we have we have some very good distribution areas around us, like Chicago and places that are very attractive and have capacity for our customers. So all we're asking for is a fair shake. Like I said, we have 120 employees. 26 of our Minnesota employees have been with our company for more than 20 years. So I think 9 of them have been with us for 30 years. So we have a lot of Minnesota people that have been working with us for a long time, and we don't want to change that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Yockey. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When you're moving your goods over longer distances, as you laugh about prospectors, all you talk about moving to Chicago, and the distribution areas down here, it's got to have mileage.
Well, it would actually decrease. Almost all the products we distribute from our facility do not get distributed to Minnesota. They get distributed to distribution centers for major retailers throughout the country. So actually, Illinois, Indiana, Kentucky, the Ohio Valley is a more attractive option for our clients. So we have to sell our service even more because we're not as attractive from a transportation cost standpoint.
Representative Earhart.
Because Mr. Scholl started our company 75 years ago in St. Paul, and that's the only reason. we did a when this first came out, we put a committee together to do some strategic planning, and decided that the best thing we could do would be to close and open in Kentucky. From a purely dollars and cents standpoint, it will be more cost effective for us to close our business, buy a building in Kentucky, and open up. We're not doing that. Like I said, we have 120 employees we care about. The family that started the business cares about it. We're an employee-owned business. We're not going to do that. If you bought our business, you probably would. But that's not where we're at. So,
thank you, Mr. Yackey. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Yackey. I think you may have answered the one question. I was wondering what, should this tax stay in place, what if you could characterize the percentage of probability that you would move to California or to Kentucky. If you want to go through that again, you feel free to. But the other question is, what is the average industry margin in your industry for these types of businesses? And, 7%, you said, consumes a majority of it. I've heard some say 3-5% is an industry average, and now today I've heard maybe a little higher than that. Could you answer that one for me?
Absolutely. It's a very good question. To answer your first question, yes, we have options to open in places throughout the Midwest. My 9-year-old son's excited about moving to California, but I don't think we're going to do that. As far as the margins, our industry is kind of divided into two sections. One, very high service levels, such as we do a lot of pick and pack, a lot of direct consumer business. Some of our competitors do pallet in, pallet out, or cross dock, if you're familiar with the industry. That's a much lower margin business, but 3.5 to 8 is probably the spectrum. If you're making more than 8% in our business, you're doing a really, really good job. So,
Representative Drazkowski, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Mr. Yackey, if you're at 8%, and the government in Minnesota takes 7 of that 8%, doesn't that create a pretty quick and very moving mandate to get the heck out of Minnesota?
Well, I think the important thing, and we met with several lawmakers throughout the winter, the biggest thing is it's not our tax. The tax is on our customers, and I think that's an important piece of this. People ask us, can you absorb the tax? Well, no, it's not my tax. I don't pay it. My customers pay it, but my customers won't pay it. They flat out have told us your options are absorb it, which is not an option for us, or find us a place outside of Minnesota. So I think that's an important piece, is that it's not the warehouse guy's tax. It's our customer's tax. So,
thank you. Representative Zellers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Yackey, the one, and probably an obvious question now, since hearing the testimony, that expansion is not on the table. But prior to this harebrained idea coming up, can you tell me, as an industry, maybe just your plant in particular, where you were on a trajectory to expand or to add jobs at your facility, and maybe not on behalf of the industry, but just what you know specifically, and if there's anecdotal industry standards as well. The question is, has this had not only a chilling effect, but almost a killing effect on your industry here in the state?
Mr. Yackey.
I wouldn't say a killing effect. I would say that what it has done, it has forced some of our larger customers to seek other options that they may. Like I said, the sporting goods company I speak of has been with us for 15 years. The last 3 years, they've grown at a 20% clip, which has been great for us and great for them. So they continue to. In fact, we were looking at buying the piece of land in front of our existing building in Lionel Lakes to expand for their potential growth. So we're obviously not proceeding with that just yet. But as they continue to grow, we grow. And it's not a killing effect, but it would be difficult to lure customers here. Location's just not enough of a deal for us.
Representative,
I don't know if that answers the question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, and I was maybe specifically is how many employees have you been adding up until this bill passed, and then had it not passed.
How about if I give you a dollars number?
Sure.
This customer started with us 15 years ago. I think the first year we billed them about $120,000. Last year we billed them $2.5 million. So, and that's the world we think of. That's how we gauge our larger customers, how much we bill them for our services on an annual basis. So that's how much they've grown.
Representative Zellers.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. And thank you, Mr. Representative Anderson. Oh, Representative Runbeck. Representative, please.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I'm remembering a comment made after the bill was passed regarding the industries that were chosen to be taxed, and the comment came from, a Senate chair, but basically saying, well, nobody came to object to this tax. And can you comment? I mean, have you in all your years of business ever had to hire a lobbyist to protect yourself? And is that the new world you're in?
75 years of business. It's good to see you again, by the way. In 75 years of business, it's the first time we've ever hired a lobbyist. There's five of us on the executive committee in our business, in our company. We sat around the room and said, should we hire a lobbyist? A couple people said, what is that? They didn't know. And so, we haven't ever been in that position. Most of us were taken by surprise, and maybe that's our own fault. And if there's an upside to it, I think we're more involved in politics now than we were a year ago. We understand the process a lot better, so I think that's one positive that's come out of it.
Yes, you do.
Representative Runbeck, further?
Well, Madam Chair, I think he made the point that I wanted to make. People shouldn't have to feel like they're a small niche and somehow somebody's going to find them and make them a target. I think that's really crazy tax policy.
Thank you. Representative Earhart.
Well, I was just thinking, Madam Chair, that the net gain to the state was offset by all the lobbyists that were hired. So there's something to be said about that.
Mr. Yackey, you don't need to comment on that. Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, I just want to say thank you. I'm glad that you're here. I'm not going to question your motives of why you were here. I'm glad that your company was started here and that hopefully that we can get this fixed and you guys can stay here. Because one of my constituents is actually a person that works at your company. And she's one of the ones that has been there for 30 years. Mm-hmm. So
fantastic to hear that.
Yeah. Yep.
We have a lot of great people in our company.
She's very worried.
And as we mentioned earlier, a large majority of those maybe have a high school education. They have very good, very, very good paying jobs, very good benefits, and that's a great testament to what we should be doing as employers, in my opinion. So,
thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. Further testimony on the repeal of the storage and warehouse tax. Welcome to the committee.
Thanks, Madam Chair, representatives. My name is Brandon Champeau. I'm a vice president with United Properties. I'm also here representing the Commercial Real Estate Development Association that some of you know as NAOP. I'm the public policy chair of that organization. And I'm not going to repeat a few things that are said today, but I want to give you guys the viewpoint from a real estate owner's perspective. United Properties owns about 6 million square feet of real estate. And we're very heavily invested in office warehouse space, and particularly in Minnesota, where probably 95% of our investment takes place. Soon after this bill was passed, since we're in the business of looking for opportunities for clients like Strategic Warehouse and some of the ones that you've heard today, we did go across the border to Hudson to start looking for land, and thought we were being pretty smart and opportunistic in doing that, and we were able to secure a piece of land that we actually had an agreed upon price. And within a week after we had agreed upon that price, this bank had four backup offers that came in from our competitors and from another tenant that was looking to potentially relocate out of Minnesota. Luckily, since we were the first one in, we were able to match the best price, but it was a 34% increase in a week. We had thought we had a number agreed upon and ended up paying about 34% more than what we were anticipating. So we took that as though we were on to something, that obviously some of our competitors were looking to do the same thing. Some of the tenants that we market that type of space to are looking to do the same thing. And so it's not something that we're necessarily proud about doing, trying to pull tenants out of Minnesota, but we're also are in the business of providing real estate solutions for a lot of our tenants. So I guess I'm hoping that, and I understand a lot of the people in this room are in favor of seeing this go away, and I appreciate that, but it will have, and you've heard it here already, a very profound impact on not only the businesses that have started and grown in Minnesota, but also the people like United Properties and other companies that have to go find real estate investments. And in the warehouse business, this will force us to have to look elsewhere, because that's just where some of our clients and tenants are going to tell us to go. And I guess just one more quick comment. The distribution centers and e-commerce are a few of the words that you may hear thrown around. There's a profound shift going on in our industry that's really tying a lot of retail to distribution, and over the next 10 years, maybe more than that, there's going to be considerable amount of demand for distribution space, and that's going to be primarily driven by the fact that a lot of people buy things on the internet now. You're not necessarily walking into a store, or maybe you are walking into a store, and then you're just logging onto your phone while you're there and buying it from Amazon or some other online retailer, and that has to come from somewhere, and it comes from it gets shipped out of a warehouse. And what we're starting to see are just considerable demand for what we call bulk warehouse space. It's just a very big box that holds a lot of little boxes. And so our state needs to really encourage this type of growth, because it is coming, but it will pass over Minnesota if we don't, if we make our state, you know, a major cost outlier, and we really are. I mean, you've heard it here that all of our tenants are being asked to take hits or find alternative sites, and it's not something that we are particularly interested in doing. We like doing business here, so we want to keep it that way.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Champeau. Appreciate you being here. Mr. Reynoso, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, ma'am.
I apologize. I'm going to back up, and I think Representative Sellers has a question for the previous testifiers. Representative Sellers.
I'll have one for you, too, Ed, but don't worry. I just wanted to know two questions, and you don't have to in any way, you know, let the client or the property, but I'm curious, the 34%, how, just a round number, 1 million, 2 million, and then what has happened to the price of some of those properties here? How far have you seen them fall?
Mr. Champeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representatives. That's a good question. You know, it was raw land, undeveloped land, so in total dollar terms, it was under $1 million, but the price that I had it at, I was pretty excited about, and the price that I was forced to pay for it, still excited about because of the considerable interest that we've had on it, but obviously we're always trying to save money like our tenants are as well. To comment on a shift in land prices here locally, I think it's really driven, our industry is so parcel by parcel, sometimes city by city, it's really hard to just globally say that land prices have dropped. I mean, we are still seeing manufacturing expand here, and there's a lot of really positive things going on in our industry right now compared to 2007, 2008, 2009. It's absolutely amazing how busy our architects, our engineers, our contractors, our lawyers, bankers, everybody is back doing a lot of deals again, and it's exciting to see because a lot of people touch a real estate project. But we just kind of see this thing as something that's potentially going to deflate the tires on this recovery that we're all getting excited about. And like I said, with just this overall excitement about, there's just going to be a need for more distribution centers. That's something that we're excited to capitalize on. But if it may be something we have to go capitalize on in another state if we don't do something about this. So,
thank you. Yes, thank you. Thanks so much for being here. I was going to call you Representative. Mr. Reynoso, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My comments are going to be like my stature, tall or short. Short, that's it. first of all, I want to just offer our support for repealing this tax. Obviously, as a transportation union and warehousing union, we represent quite a few folks in the warehousing industry. We appreciate this legislature looking to fix this problem. And hindsight's 20/20. We never know what forecasts are going to look like. But nonetheless, we opposed it when it was passed originally. But obviously, we also understood that everybody had to play a role, and everybody had to pay a fair share. And at the end of the day, the legislature decided that this is the direction we needed to go. With that being said, we believe that we're situated in the state now that we feel that this legislature should be responsible enough to take care of this issue. We hope to join everybody in this legislature in support of repealing this tax. As you know, we support our employers. And at the end of the day, when it comes to cutting profit for some of our employers, it's going to hurt us at the bargaining table, whether it's with benefits or wages. So whether it's Murphy Warehouse or Blandin Paper that warehouses products, we're certainly concerned with the impact that this may have if it's not repealed, to our employers and subsequently our members. So we appreciate your support on this issue.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Appreciate you being here.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I thought I was going to get a question from Representative
Zellers. What is your question?
He said I was going to get a question.
So do you really want to be called Representative Reynoso?
Absolutely not. Never. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Further testimony on the storage and warehouse tax. Is there anybody else who would like to testify? Okay. That we're going to lay all those over for further consideration, and we do know there are a number of people here who want to testify on all three taxes, so maybe they're holding off. So with that, we can jump then to the farm and commercial equipment repair, and first we have Representative McNamer. I don't know if he's here. There he is. And would someone move Representative McNamer's bill? It's 1893. Representative Anzalez moves House File 1893 before the committee. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Representative McNamer, I don't know if you've been following what we're doing here. I don't know how long you've been in the room, but we have a number of authors on each provision, so we're just going to hear from each of you and then take testimony on all of them together. So you're first on this one, so welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. I'm Representative Jay McNamer. I'm from District 12A. That's in West Central Minnesota. My area is extremely rural. Our largest community, which is Morris, has a population of about 5,200 people. 2,000 of those are students. So it's a small community also. It's about 3,200 people. You might wonder why I bring a bill to you about the elimination of sales tax on labor for commercial and industrial repairs. Although my district is small, and it's extremely real, actually my district is big, the communities are small. We do have contractors and manufacturers and businesses. Our plants and businesses are usually smaller, and our profit margins aren't very large. However, we do employ people. Every expense we do incur does affect our workforce, which in turn affects our community. The community that I live in which I was mayor for 4 years, which is Elbow Lake, has a population of 1,100 people, but we have 4 manufacturing businesses. When these businesses are in full operation, our community prospers. When our manufacturers struggle, so does our community. Now, we're asking that the sales tax on labor and maintenance for the commercial and industrial repairs be repealed to help our smallest businesses. Those smallest businesses are the businesses that are at the most risk for failure. By giving these small employers a little more financial room, we can help people, help the businesses stay open, and help people retain their jobs, and help us recover from our last recession.
Thank you very much. And I think if everybody's okay with this, we're just going to have you now go to your next bill. That's next on the list. So we're laying that one over for future consideration, then we'll go to McNamer, then it's Isaacson, Will Scott, Hamilton. Representative McNamer. And if Representative Anzalez, are you willing to move?
Madam Chair.
House File 1950, Representative Anzalez moves, is now before the committee. Welcome, or again, Mr. Representative McNamer, please.
Good. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Purcell and myself are going to bring House File 1950 before you today. I don't know if he's here right now. It affects both of our districts, and it affects a large number of farmers and loggers throughout Minnesota. I will present the farm position, and Representative Purcell is going to present the logging position. I don't see him here, so I'll go on. Is that okay?
Sure, that's okay. I think it'll get covered by someone in testimony. So, okay, good. And many authors have that as well.
I'll pick it up for a minute.
Yes, okay. Rep. Sam Zellers is going to take care of it for you. Representative McNamer.
Again, I am from District 12A, which again is West Central Minnesota. My district was formed because of agriculture. It exists today because of agriculture, and our future is agriculture. We are so agriculturally orientated that the city that I was in mayor in, Elbow Lake, has its welcome signs made out of grain bins and silo staves. And you know what? They look good. Lost my place here.
That's okay.
House File 1950 is asking to repeal the sales tax on labor for farm equipment repairs. Our area has seen an extreme downturn in farm prices this year. Corn prices have dropped to or close to the break-even point. And this is my first time I've ever seen sugar beet prices where we've made little or no money. I've been around a long time. My wife's family and my parents were farmers. I remember the good times of the 70s, but I also remember the 80s. I can still hear my stepdad sitting at the dinner table saying, there's one crop carrying this farm. That crop was sugar beets, which this year was the first year I know of that beets did not make money. My wife's father did not raise sugar beets in the 80s. He lost his farm. Now, I'll do everything and anything possible to prevent this from occurring again. And I hope you can understand why I'm asking for the repeal of sales tax on the labor for farm equipment repairs. It might not be enough to keep a farm out of foreclosure, but it might be enough to help little farmers like my parents and my wife's parents to keep their farm. If you're from a farming community, and some of you are, that's part of your life. I'm still trying to retain what's left of my mother's farm, and it's hard to do, especially with the loss of agricultural income. You have heard my emotional testimony. I did a little emotional about this. If Representative Purcell is here.
Great. Representative Purcell, we would like you to come and test your co-testifying on this bill with Representative McNamer. He'll give you the quick what you're supposed to say. We'll wait 5 seconds. One, two, three, four. Okay, Representative Purcell, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Committee members, good to see all your smiling faces again. I getting on this bill here, as you know, come from the logging part of the country, and this has been an issue for us up there, and we got enough things going on in the woods that we think we can this would help make things a little bit easier for the loggers up north. So I'm going to keep it short here because we've got some more testimony that we're planning to bring some experts. You know, I just got a chainsaw, you know, so I'm not the guy that hauls the stuff out of the woods. So anyway, I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about this, and hope you take a good hard look at it.
Thank you so much. Okay, so we've got those two done. We're going to lay that one over also for future consideration. I am going to go ahead and move House File 1888 before the committee. That's Representative Isaacson's, as we did for Representative Garofalo. He's in another meeting right now, and we know this one. We've just heard it, same as the one that was heard first, Representative McNamer's first bill. So I'll lay that over then for future consideration. So that one's done. And then I also, if Representative Wills, is she here? She is. Please, welcome to the committee. As she comes down, I talked to Representative Hamilton. He has another meeting. We talked about his bill on the floor, and as he also has, he sees other authors have the same bill, and he asked if I would move his. So I'm going to now move Representative Hamilton's House File 2105 before the committee, and then we'll lay that over for consideration in the future. So that's for Representative Rod Hamilton. Welcome to the committee. And will someone move Representative?
Madam Chair, I'll move House File 1973.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. Your bill is before the committee. Nice to see you, Representative Wills.
Likewise. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee for the opportunity to present House File 1973. And there are several bills that are very similar, but just a couple of points that I wanted to make about my bill. And I'll reference you to the Minnesota Revenue handout for the tax impact. It outlines that this bill would repeal all three of the business-to-business taxes. And we've heard numerous testifiers today, and we'll be hearing numerous more on the importance of why these need to be repealed in a timely manner. And even the the warehousing tax, which hasn't even taken effect yet, and yet we're seeing the impacts on our businesses in Minnesota. And so I've included a few handouts for you. And as we've been hearing stories in the media and our local papers talking about the impact of these business-to-business taxes, I included a story from the Star Tribune on repealing the telecommunications tax. And so I wanted to make sure that you saw that and how important it is to repeal this tax, considering Minnesota's desire to invest in broadband and grow that industry. The tax works against that effort. And then also wanted to highlight a letter that I included on specifically on the farm equipment repair tax, and that is signed by several organizations, including the Minnesota Agri-Growth Council, Minnesota Farm Bureau, the Minnesota Farmers Union, and so on, outlining how that tax is negatively impacting their businesses. And then the third tax that's included in this bill is the warehousing storage tax, which we heard quite a bit of testimony on. So I think what sets my bill apart somewhat is including all three together, and then also the bill is retroactive to when these taxes were passed into law last July 1st, and it also includes refunds to the businesses who have already been hit by these tax increases. So I just wanted to give you that overview, and also one point on the telecommunications tax. There's been a study on the impact of that tax, and wanted to draw your attention. I believe this handout went out to the committee. It's the complete study that was done, and it was found how this would negatively affect businesses in the state of Minnesota, including a loss of over 3,000 jobs and a hit of $308 million to the state's GDP. And so I know we're going to hear numerous testifiers on the rest of the business-to-business tax repeal bills, and so I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I do appreciate the opportunity to present my bill to you today and emphasize how important it is to repeal these taxes as soon as possible for the benefit of the businesses and the families in our state. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Appreciated it. And we're going to lay this over for future consideration. So thank you so much. And we're going to go to Representative Scott. And as she comes up, I should say I kind of goofed on the agenda. I see we had meant to not do these joint ones until we got through telecom, but we said we'd follow how it is. So we've taken Representative Wills, and now we're going to go to Representative Scott. So welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate you hearing the bill today. And my bill, the only difference really between my bill and Representative Wills is that mine is not retroactive. I talked to staff yesterday about making an amendment to an author's amendment to make it that way, but since she already has the bill, and I believe Representative Hamilton does too, just a couple of notes here, a couple of things that I've noticed in sitting through this hearing. Just the reinforcement that people in capital will leave. And the other noteworthy thing that I've found through listening about the warehousing is that, you know, I'm from Iowa originally. Maybe I better contact my relatives there to get into the warehousing business if this tax is not repealed. So with that, that's really, I won't take any more of your time.
Okay, and thank you. And for the record, Representative Scott, so you're supportive of the retro or for the refunds as well.
Correct.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Madam Chair, I'm with House File 1977.
Oh, thank you for catching that. I appreciate that. Representative Drazkowski moves Representative Scott's bill before us, and we're now going to lay it over for future consideration. Okay, so thank you. We're going to now take testimony on all the farm and commercial equipment repair bills. We have now heard them all, and we welcome the public to talk to us about that cluster of bills. And, you know, members, this is long, but I appreciate those who have been able to come and go and stay through because we've got the next set, and then we're going to be done earlier than I think any of us thought. Since it's only 3 o'clock, I think people are going to be able to get to all the places they need to be to tonight. Okay, so I'm sorry. Oh, can you hang on just a minute? Representative Quam has a bill on this as well. Can we move that for him?
So
oh, he's here. I'm so sorry. I didn't know. We're missing it here. So Representative Zellers moves House File 2123 for future consideration as we look at all these. Representative Quam, please talk to us about your bill. I apologize.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's okay. I got a haircut. You probably, didn't notice. Basically, one of the reasons why I wanted to cover it in this section is that I have quite a few. I grew up on a farm, many relatives that farm, and there's a business that's been around, and you'll see a letter from the Peterson blacksmith shop. The business has been around for, they're in their 10th decade, fifth generation or five generations of serviced people, and they have had a lot of issues bringing this tax in. And frankly, they service individuals, companies, and farmers. And what they've been told is if an individual comes in for the same repair that a farmer does, the farmer gets taxed, the individual does not. And the bookkeeping plus the fairness issue is one of their concerns. But you can read from the letter. And again, this is one that was introduced for the special session too. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. And I apologize that I overlooked it. Sorry about that. Okay, so we now want to take testimony, and I'm sure they're all in support of these bills. So welcome to the committee, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name's Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union, and yes, we strongly support House File 1950, and also appreciate the other bills that have been offered. We support the repeal, and also, not a surprise, we support the retroactive or paying back the people that have paid, if possible. Not a surprise, like I said, it was our number one resolution at our county conventions this fall that were held all over the state, where our members gathered to debate policy. And just the point that our members are not always buying new or renting tractors or renting the new stuff, and every year going back and renting it. When we visited with our members about this, they'd tell me how much they try to fix this, keep their equipment running as much as they can. And, and some farmers have their own shop and they're great at fixing things and they don't incur the costs that others do where they have to go to the dealership. I started getting calls from this in July, right after it went into effect July 1st. And it was interesting because the wheat harvest comes first in Minnesota. And when the wheat harvest came, I almost got three calls in one day where farmer, called and said they have an $8,000 bill on their combine, and that's the hard part. And I've gotten those calls before, I've gotten that quote before when they tell you it's going to be $8,000, and you're like, oh boy. And then he's going to say it's got another $500 on top of that for a new tax we just passed in the legislature. And so that was, it was hard for a lot of folks. And so and again, you're paying the tax when something goes wrong, and that was a weird thing. You're not going out and choosing to buy something. You're paying it when something bad has happened to you on your equipment. You're trying to get it fixed. You're trying to finish your harvest and complete that. I'll also make one other quick note too that some of our farmers have brought up that's also important too, to keep your equipment running as. Representative McNamer said the prices have gone down. We've also had some tax changes at the federal level on like Section 179. We did have some good years in the farm economy the last few years, and farmers did buy and also use the Section 179 at the federal level. But the federals, if you followed that, they've lowered it from $500,000 to $25,000. They may change that back, and they may not. And so you see a lot of people trying to keep that equipment going. So we appreciate legislature does grant very many exemptions to farmers, and we appreciate those. But as Representative McNamer says, we do pay a lot of sales tax, but we also are in a cyclical nature of a business, and the exemptions we do enjoy do help us a lot. So thank you for your consideration.
Thank you so much, Mr. Peterson. Appreciate it. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Wayne Brandt. I'm Executive Vice President of Minnesota Timber Producers Association and Minnesota Forest Industries. Members of the timber producers are loggers, truckers, small sawmills, allied equipment companies. Minnesota Forest Industries members are paper mills, sawmills, engineered wood products manufacturers. producers of renewable energy from biomass, to landowners, and utility pole manufacturers. We're kind of one-stop shopping here. We obviously support the three issues that have been discussed today. Repeal of the sales tax on equipment repairs for logging for commercial equipment and the warehousing tax. And I'll just speak briefly to them. Ours is an industry that we would hope to be cyclical, as Mr. Peterson referred to the farming economy. Unfortunately, our cycle's been down for about 8 years. The proxy for the size of activities, particularly when it comes to logging, is the amount of wood that's consumed in the state. Back in 2005, we consumed about 4.2 million cords a year. Last year, that was a little under 2.5 million cords. So we've lost about 40% of that. There really haven't been any margins in logging in particular for a number of years, whether it's logging in Representative David's district, Representative Druskowski's district, Representative Anzelt's district. It's been a tough go. Our machinery has continued to age. There was a recent University of Minnesota study confirming that, and in many instances we're a long distance from the repair shop. The logging equipment is highly sophisticated these days. Very few of my members even own chainsaws anymore, let alone work with them on the job. So frequently, if you're a logger in Badette and Birchdale, the repair facility is in Grand Rapids, so the mechanics are driving up, and before they even get there, and with the return trip, you're going to have a $1,500 bill before they start working on the equipment. So it's been difficult times. On the machinery repairs inside plants, we did a survey of our members, the paper mills, engineered wood products, and the larger sawmills. That tax costs us about $2 million a year. That's not the smaller sawmills, just the larger sawmills. And, you know, we're in a very competitive business in a worldwide commodity you know, based industry. So that has a significant impact on the willingness of the owners to continue to invest and expand here. And finally, Mr. Reynoso mentioned Blandon relative to the warehouse tax. There are a lot of our products that are warehoused, a number that are transshipped through the Port of Duluth, both paper and pulp, and also finished paper products where the ownership may not change but will move through merchant paper merchants, paper brokers, if you will, and several of them located here in the Twin Cities. And that's a highly transportable and changeable activity to move it to somewhere else, you know, whether it's from Representative Simonson's district in Duluth over to Superior or off to Hudson or somewhere else. So we appreciate the committee's work and support on these issues, and look forward to continuing to work with you on them throughout the session.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Brandt. Yes, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Doug Busselman. I'm the Director of Public Policy for the Minnesota Farm Bureau, and we are here today to speak very briefly in support of the passage of the concept of repeal of the labor charges for farm machinery equipment. There's a number of options that are available. I think some are more favorable than others, and we would work. We would very much appreciate timely action, and we also support the retroactivity in bringing about those kinds of changes. So thank you very much for your consideration, and we look forward to working with the committee down the road.
Great. Thank you so much for being here. Appreciate it. Mr. Hickey, welcome to the committee.
Hello, Madam Chair, members. Mike Hickey with the National Federation of Independent Business. Many of you are familiar with our group, but we're the largest business group in terms of membership, with about 13,000 members in Minnesota, and most of them being very small. I wanted to speak just briefly to all three of them, and I think we're to that point in the agenda, and I'm glad you got to hear from some real business owners today versus the groups, because we're here all the time, and it takes a special effort for business people to come here and spend the kind of time they need to be heard. So I'm really glad they were here. Just briefly on all three of them, I'll start with the tax on the repair of business and farm equipment. This one is especially could be especially bad for small businesses that are manufacturers, contractors, or farmers. because their equipment repairs can be quite expensive. A replacement cost on some of this equipment can range from $75,000 to $250,000. And so when you look at something that expensive, you're going to do what you have to do to repair it. And I talked to a member of ours who does a lot of equipment repair, and she said on larger repairs, average labor costs can run about $3,657. That was the numerical average, so it would be the sales tax applied to that. But as Mr. Peterson said, you know, it's a double negative. Something's going real wrong. You're trying to get a job done. Something big breaks down, and here you are paying an expensive repair, and now the new sales tax on top of it. Very few states do this. As you probably know, to our knowledge, five states do this. Two of them don't have an income tax, so they're choosing to tax this way and avoiding a big financial obligation on their citizens the other way. And so very few do it. And just encouraged by the presumption here that we're going to hopefully pass these bills and correct what occurred last year. So that's very encouraging, and appreciate your interest. Really much the same situation with the farm equipment, very expensive equipment, and people are going to have to pay a lot in repairs and then pay the sales tax and the labor because they just can't afford to replace the equipment. So very similar to the situation with the manufacturer or the contractor. I also want to urge you to do these retroactively, as we've discussed. It would be nice if people could get a little back on that and not do it just prospectively. Finally, on the warehouse bill, appreciate your interest on that, too. This is a bad policy for all the businesses, especially those that have to utilize these types of services. But as we've heard from the business owners here today, really devastating for those people who own warehouse operations and rent and lease warehouse operations, and really afraid a lot of these players may exit the Minnesota economy, go to our neighboring states. And if that occurs, what's the hardship for the employees? You're going to make a super long commute. You're going to lose your job. And so I think this one really has could have an impact on our whole economy that is really negative. And I hope we don't find out that what occurs if we leave this in place, because it seems to be there's a strong desire to move these bills along. But anyways, thanks for the time. And I just wanted to share our thoughts and urge you to pass all three of these bills.
Thank you so much. Welcome to the committee, and then we're going to have Representative Anderson will have a question. And I should say that we need to get Representative Rosenthal and Quam up, because I made an error in the agenda, and we really are not to testimony on all three. We want to do testimony on farm and capital equipment, and you're here for that, right?
I'm here for repair maintenance.
Okay.
I'm good?
Please, welcome.
Thank you,
yes.
Chair. My name is Dave Coble. I'm CEO of ProTech Interconnect Solutions in Chaska, Minnesota. We're a manufacturer of printed circuit boards, and we employ about 100 people. We're a very capital-intensive business, and in order to compete and grow in the United States, we need to stay at the high end of the technology curve. We reinvest every year in new high-technology equipment. We're a small to medium-sized business. We're not able to afford to have maintenance support personnel on staff to service all of our repair and maintenance needs. Our maintenance staff performs general plant and equipment maintenance, but on most of our high-end, high-tech equipment, we utilize our vendor support staff or contract with maintenance groups who are experts in their field. In some cases, we're required to have annual maintenance contracts on a number of high-end pieces of equipment to make sure that they have any repair and maintenance work is completed correctly and safely. A change last year to tax repair and maintenance labor represents a significant cost increase to our business. We're a small to medium-sized business. This will cost us $30,000 to $40,000 a year in additional tax. It increases the cost of our equipment maintenance contracts, preventative maintenance contracts, repairs on our high-end drilling machines, and other labor repair costs on equipment in our facility. That net impact on our business of this legislation is that it makes us less competitive with our competition in the U.S. and abroad. Last year, about 15% of our business was international. Looking at ways to improve our cost structure is a daily event in our business. In order to be a viable supplier to our customers, we need to offer great service but also be cost competitive. In a very competitive market, the additional cost of this tax can't be passed on to our customers. We eat it. It becomes an additional cost that takes away from our ability to invest in our ongoing capital equipment needs, our employees, and our ever-increasing high cost of medical insurance. The tax legislation that was passed may have created situations of unintended consequences, but for our business and businesses like ours, it's a real significant cost that just generally makes us less competitive. Every member of our ownership group is from Minnesota. We want to grow our business in Minnesota, and we want to provide more employment in Minnesota. But this new tax takes away from our ability to fully invest in our business. Thank you very much for your time today. We hope you give this consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Koble. Appreciate you being here. Welcome to the committee.
Glad to be here. Nice to see you again, Madam Chairman. Thank you, committee, for being here. My name is Michael Jorgensen. I'm the president of Impressions Incorporated. We are located in what they call the Industrial Park over the Westgate Park over off of 280, west side of St. Paul, west side of St. Paul. We are a folding carton manufacturer, roughly $42 million in sales, family-owned. We've been in business since 1967. We started our business as a commercial printer, producing brochures, collateral, and such. Over time, we evolved into folding cartons because commercial business has taken such a hit because of the Internet. So as a folding carton producer, we're relatively small. We compete against a national competitive base. I'm here to talk about the equipment and repair tax. One of the biggest trends that I have seen over my years as far as being involved in the consumer product business, and if I could back up a little bit, I'd say that Impressions Incorporated is not a household name, but our customers are. You see our products, the products we produce, on store shelves across the nation and all of the large retailers. The retailers exert an enormous control over the manufacturers, who there exert enormous control over us. A big trend has been what they call SKU proliferation, SKU being an acronym for stock keeping unit. At one time, a national brand had a product, Coke, anything like that. There were one or two or three varieties. Now there may be up to 250 varieties of a single national brand. These retailers do not believe in inventory. They don't think it exists. The warehouse people could tell you what they do with it. It exists. They just don't acknowledge it. If they decide something is discontinued, it's gone at the manufacturer's expense. In order to deal with this change, Impressions Incorporated has begun to invest heavily in digital printing equipment to produce folding carton packaging, both on the printing and converting side. We are one of the first in the nation to take this next step. We're taking a huge risk in doing this. This high-end digital equipment is expensive, and it comes with, oftentimes, an 18% applied service tax. So $1 million piece of equipment, you pay the manufacturer 18%. They don't even know the breakout of the labor, the parts, and the warranty. Hewlett-Packard, one of these manufacturers, said, you are the only people that have even asked us for this, so I know that there's no other tax like this across the nation. So here we are, trying to take this chance, move forward, and now we're paying the additional sales tax on this particular product or service for which we had no choice. Moving forward, Impressions Incorporated has looked at expanding and looked at expanding out of the state of Minnesota because of this, because if we're going to continue to go down this path, we felt that it would be best to expand outside of these borders because of the tax primarily, and also looking out that a lot of our customers are not located here. Even though the corporation headquarters are here, the actual manufacturing plant is located elsewhere in the country. I was just looking at some of the locations that we ship to today. So El Paso, Texas, Laredo, Texas, Brampton, Ontario, Bucyrus, Ohio, Osage, Iowa, Ames, Iowa, Knoxville, Iowa, Atlanta, Georgia, Menominee, Wisconsin, Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin, Elk Grove, Illinois, and it goes on. Our roots are here. We're not a big company. Expansion would come with some pain. We want to stay here. But we definitely are, you know, asking the committee to look at this tax, do what you can to repeal this tax, all the business visits taxes. We cannot pass these costs along. They are absorbed. They impact hiring, they impact investment, they impact a lot of things that ultimately hurt not only Impressions Incorporated, our employees, but also the state of Minnesota as well. Thank you very much again for your time today.
Thank you for being here, Mr. Jorgensen. Appreciate it. Bye. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Rich Strom. I'm the president of the Minnesota South Dakota Equipment Dealers Association. Our association represents the farm, industrial, construction, and outdoor power equipment dealers in Minnesota. I'm not going to talk about everything that I was going to because a lot of it's been covered. You've heard about farm equipment, logging equipment, and manufacturing equipment. I think we haven't talked enough about construction equipment and the small contractors who are blowing snow, moving lots on snow on your parking lots, the small landscaper, lawn service. Those people are all paying an extra 6.85% tax on the repairing and maintaining their equipment. Some of those small contractors make less money than annually than the people they're working for, and they have to pay 6.85% more than any of us do for our residential lawnmowers. I just want to mention that our members are the equipment dealers. We're the ones that sell the equipment, and we're the ones that service the equipment. We don't pay the taxes, but we have to collect the tax. And except we have to pay sales tax on our repair of our own equipment. The collection of this tax has not been easy to implement. I sympathize with those that may have to go through this process if these taxes aren't repealed. It's been difficult for our customers. It's been very difficult for the Department of Revenue to figure out how, within a very short period of time, how these taxes are supposed to be applied. I don't really expect a lot of sympathy from the committee when I say it's difficult to collect the sales tax, but it is in fact difficult, and it's been difficult to determine who gets charged the tax and who doesn't get charged the tax. That's been mentioned by one of the other presenters. And I'm concerned when our dealers get audited the first time that they haven't done it right, they haven't collected the right amount, they didn't know who to charge tax to, they didn't start collecting the tax in time. When they get audited, they're going to have to go back to their customers to try to collect this tax, or they're going to have to eat the tax. One other concern that we have, I don't have any evidence of it at this point, but some of the large equipment, as has been mentioned, is very expensive to repair, and farmers along the border could very easily take this equipment across the border to a Wisconsin dealer and have it fixed just as well over there. So we encourage the repeal of the sales tax on repair and maintenance of all commercial and industrial equipment. I would not like to see it just applied the repeal to the farm equipment, but all commercial and industrial equipment. And we would support making that retroactive. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Strom. Appreciate it. Are there further testifiers on the farm and commercial equipment repair? Just on that. Okay. If not, we're just going to get the telecom authors up, which is Representative Rosenthal's first. And then we have Isaacson and Quam. And then all the rest of the bills are repealing everything kind of bills. And Ms. Cadoon, when we get to those, we're going to take you first because we know you have a big event tonight and for to testify on them all after we get through these few. So, Representative Rosenthal, would someone like to move Representative Rosenthal's bill? I can do that. I will move House File 2181 for consideration. Welcome to the committee. And Representative Rosenthal, I don't know how long you've been in here. We're just asking you to give a few minutes on it, and then we're taking testimony in groups on all the bills.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members, and Representative Earhart. You're the other half of my district. Anyway, Madam Chair, I'd just like to give a brief description of what this bill does. It reinstates a sales tax use exemption for telecommunications equipment repealed during the 2013 session. The repeal is effective July 1st, 2013, and this would allow purchasers to go back and ask for refunds on those sales. Having first-class access to high-speed internet connection, I think, is vital to our community and our state to remain competitive. The telecommunications industry has made substantial investments in our state. Investments exceeded $5 billion over the last 5 years. Half of it has gone to suburban and rural districts. And this is something that Representative Johnson has really, really worked on, and that is making this whole state broadband ready and having the businesses and the communities and the hospitals and the universities all up to speed so we can be the best state that we can be.
Okay, thank you. And I'm going to move your amendment that you have that we're getting here now to get it. Oh, this is the bill. Oh, that's right. You're at House Bill XXX. Okay, so we've got that. All right, so thank you so much. We're going to lay this over for future consideration.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
And I know there are people here who are going to, you have testifiers here who are going to testify for it. And we are now going to go to Representative Isaacson, and I'll move House File 1889 for Representative Isaacson. Welcome back.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will be equally or more brief. Again, the same argument as before. When we're looking at a projected surplus, we do not need this tax, and therefore we should repeal it, as well as I think this particular tax had some negative consequences on really job creation in that area of broadband, and it seemed to, we took a tool out of the toolbox for those guys to be successful, and I'd like to see that we reinstate that tool, considering we gave that tool to almost everybody else last session. So that's all I got.
Great. Thank you so much. Appreciate that, and we'll lay that one over as well, and there are testifiers here for your bill as well, and then we have Representative Quam again. So Representative Quam, would someone like to move, or I can? Who said that? Representative Zellers is moving. Is it this one? House File 2124, Representative Quam, is that right? Yes. Welcome again.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, again, this was something that was originally introduced for the special session. And when businesses were booming, a lot of companies had specialty shops and different areas that they grew internal. When times got tougher over the last decade or two, we've seen companies spin off or discontinue that, and including equipment and personnel. A good example is IBM had many specialty shops and internal support groups that they discontinued. It wasn't core. Well, what happened to these people is some of them went and purchased the surplus equipment and set up a small business to not only support the original company, but others. So we had entrepreneurs stepping out there, and they didn't have a lot of capital, didn't have a lot of cash, and they're filling a niche, and some of them are now supporting businesses across different states, not just Minnesota. But again, they have low margins, they've got surplus equipment that's a little bit older, and they're keeping it going, and this tax adds an undue burden upon these small business people who are having to spend a little higher portion of their revenue on maintaining and repairing this equipment. But they are key because they also support other companies in our economy. So I think removing this tax on the repair and maintenance of precision and electronic equipment would have a rippling effect that would improve our economy. And thank you.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. You get the award because you've, I think, been here the longest of any member who's not on the committee. So thank you, Representative Quantum. And we're going to lay it over for future consideration. And then we have Zellers, Anderson, Draskowski, and I had to. And after that, I haven't taken my second Lincheski bill up, but I'm going to ask Ms. Kadoon if you want to. Do you want to testify now, or you want to wait through? Okay. You know, there's this big event that the chamber has tonight, and so we're aware that you need to be somewhere. So Representative Zellers is up. And again, we're giving people the option to just do them at the committee table if you're on the committee, which is...
Sure.
So Representative Zellers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so my version is the full Monty, as you will. Just get it all out of the way in one bill, in one fell swoop. The one thing, it's anecdotal from my travels around the state, but I think you've heard it here from just about every testifier, that Minnesota is uncompetitive with these taxes. Whether it's a warehousing tax, where it would be one of
one of one, whether it's the telecom, whether it's the farm implement, and to the gentleman from the Minnesota South Dakota equipment, I actually have heard of implement dealers who are soliciting, who will come over, will waive the fee, will come get your tractor, we'll take it back, we'll fix it across the border, and then we'll bring it back to you. You don't pay the sales tax. So it is happening. It is out there. The one thing that I think we did miss was the processing plant for flour. So I think it was down in the southeastern part of the state, where the flour is ground, then it's processed, then it is divided up, and the distribution or the value add is what's being taxed on this. You heard it with some of the growing trend for these fulfillment houses. If that's where we are going to be good at efficiencies and effectiveness, but yet it's now adding on, in some cases, almost the entire profit margin, I don't know how we're not only competitive, but why somebody would look at us. And that's the, you know, I'm sure Representative Garofalo is here. He would come up with all kinds of fiery speeches about how boneheaded and wrong and whatnot. For me, it comes down to what is it going to mean for us in the future. This is going to mean lost jobs. It's going to mean a loss of potential. It's going to mean a loss of innovation. The Impressions, Inc., that's what Minnesota is great for, is that someone comes up with a new idea, a great idea, we're going to add on to what we're already doing and make it that much better, is now going to be stopped in time, or it's going to jump the border to Hudson. And all these bills, and I know in some cases, Madam Chair, we won't divulge where you were on some of these bills, even private conversations, you said it publicly, but they're all a bad idea. And if... Now that there is a surplus, you know, mine are retroactive as well. You go through Department of Revenue to apply for your refunds. But I would encourage you, Madam Chair, I'm not going to add on to much to what has already been said about what this means for our state and our state's economy. But my request or suggestion would be to do it before April 1st, because there are a lot of people out there that are already filing taxes that are all going to have to go back and change some of these things. Doing it sooner rather than later, I know the House is always far more efficient at their work than the other body, the lower chamber, but if you can, push them to do this just as fast as possible, too, as we're not a lot left to do in session, not a lot left, you know, from last year, but if you're going to do anything at all, get anything out of the way and get it done early, getting rid of as many of these as possible, and God bless you if you can get rid of them, all of them, I won't hold my breath because I think some of them are going to get left on the table and are going to be in the bill still, but I think it is... Really, it's the not only the loss of revenue, not only the loss of jobs right now, the chilling effect to all these different industries, it is the loss of potential, the loss of future jobs, of future smart manufacturing plants built by a girl from Ely, Minnesota, getting her engineering degree at the University of Minnesota. That being lost because of a warehouse tax that was enacted with maybe one body's knowledge and others not, is just probably the worst part of these bills for me, and why I would highly encourage you, Madam Chair, and I do thank you, because this can't be fun. I mean, hearing that a lot of the bills that were brought forward, maybe not by you, Madam Chair, were really bad ideas and what it means. I do give you a lot of credit for allowing people to come up and say this is how bad it is and this is what it's going to do, because that can't be fun. But I really highly encourage you to work with the other body to get these things repealed and do it as fast as possible, because this kind of inconsistency in our tax policy is what leads to business stagnation. You've heard it from these folks out here. It will continue, and after a while, people will just make the decision, you know what, I can't wait any longer. I'm either going to close my doors or I'm going to move someplace else, and that for us is a bad thing for the future of the state. So thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for including my bill in consideration.
Thank you, Representative Zellers. Appreciate it very much. Representative Anderson. Oh, Representative Zellers, you need to move your bill.
I'm kind of a rookie, Madam Chair. I will move House File 1913 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill.
I feel better when former speakers forget. So Representative Zellers now moves 1939 before the committee, and we're going to lay it over for future consideration. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll move House File 2014 for possible consideration in the omnibus. tax bill.
Okay,
hopefully
so
that's the right motion.
Anderson has moved 2014, and it is before the tax committee. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill contains all of the repeals for the B2B taxes. That includes the warehouse tax, the telecommunication tax, and the equipment repair tax. It also has the federal conformity, similar to what you and Representative Davis had in your bill. And then it also has the provision on the gift tax, too. So those are all, it's kind of the big kahuna, basically, of tax bills. But since you've put me into the telecommunication side of things, I just want to speak a little bit to that and the fact that there was just an article yesterday that I was reading, I think it was in the Star Tribune, talking about that, you know, an economist figures that we'll lose over 3,000 jobs just in that sector alone. And I know there's been other predictions, too, by the High Tech Association and other business groups out there that are very concerned about what this means for telecommunication in the state. And I think what's even more alarming is the fact that we're going to see a loss in investments in telecommunication, and that hits our greater Minnesota communities in particular, in their ability to get effective and quality telecommunication out in their communities, and that obviously has an impact on our overall economy for our state. So all of these things combined, I mean, certainly we've heard all the testimony here today. The warehouse tax in particular, I mean, 18% and job loss for folks that have their GEDs, pretty hard to come by a new job, especially given the economy right now. So with all of those things in mind, I hope that folks can come together and agree on these things. So thank you, Madam Chair, for hearing my bill. I do appreciate that.
Thank you. Representative Anderson, you have A1. Did you want to quick amend that on?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is actually brought to me by Ms. Manzi. It's just a fix, a little technical fix. And I don't know if she's still here. She wants to
it looks like
kind of
walk
through. It looks
like it's just a date change. I think everyone has it. So if we, or it's coming right now. So if we could vote that amendment on for Representative Anderson. So Representative Anderson moves the A1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted. Great. And thank you, Representative Anderson. I appreciate it. And I appreciate that you do have other provisions in there that I explicitly wasn't going to bring up. And we are going to hear the gift and estate changes as well in the future. So thank you for that. Okay, we'll get to that. Representative Drazkowski, is that? Yes. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House File 1909.
Was that it? 1909. Okay. Thank you. So Representative Drazkowski moves House File 1909 before the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, as you know, and probably especially those of you in the rural areas, and we heard Representative McNamer talk about it earlier, the dynamics in the agricultural community are real. We're seeing property tax shifts to farmland that are weighing heavily upon our farmers. I'm hearing that over and over again, and we have to find ways to relieve the burden for them. Property taxes are usually, at least for crop farmers, the largest expense that they have, and so we need to find ways to remove the burden. And this legislature put a heaped pile of burdens, tax burdens on Minnesota farmers last session. Three of which are outlined here in the business-to-business tax package, and these do also both the telecommunications and the farm repair and commercial industrial repair are retroactive in my bill. And in addition to these, you know, the bill does contain some other items that I hope we can entertain later, Madam Chair. There's a gift tax that the legislature heaped on farmers, and decreasing the ability for farm families to be able to transfer their land, young farmers to take over, essentially will be placed more and more in a position with both this gift tax and the estate tax difficulties that were placed into law last session, in a position in which they will have to liquidate part of the business in order to pay the property taxes, or the taxes, excuse me, generally moving forward. So that is one of them. The local authorization to raise taxes that we gave both to counties and schools in the forms of school tax levy increases and wheelage tax increases are included in the bill, as well as others. So I hope we can take a look at those. Two quick things just on the business-to-business, or just one quick thing, I guess. It seems that as I talk to some of our agricultural businesses, our tire repair businesses and others in my district, and have talked to them since they became aware of these taxes. By the way, they went into effect, as I recall, July 1st. But really, knowledge of this didn't happen until well into August, before many of these businesses were even aware that the tax existed. And not to mention, were they not given the machinery, equipment, technology, etc., upgrades to their systems in order to accommodate the new tax? And many were not collecting the tax. And my guess is there are still some today that are not collecting the tax. So you've got businesses that have collected the tax and businesses that have not collected the tax. And I thank Mr. Michael for his approach in the language here and in other bills to provide refunds directly to the individuals, similar to what we do with the sales tax refund on capital equipment. And that's probably the best approach we can take, unless somebody can think of a better one. And if Mr. Michael can't think of a better one, I don't know who can. But even given that, I'm afraid we're going to have some people who are not going to get their refund back because of what this legislature did to them in this mistake. And so we're not going to be able to treat everyone equally, unfortunately. But this is probably the best we can do. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you, Representative Drazkowski. And Representative Drazkowski, that's one of the reasons that you mentioned that we do need to spend a little time and just can't pass these, even if everybody wanted to vote for them in both caucuses today. Those are the kind of issues that we need to talk to the Department of Revenue about a little bit. How do you actually do these refunds if we can get together? You highlighted that it is a complication depending on how you do it, and I think that is one of the tricky pieces in the two B2Bs that are underway. And so that's some of the detail that I think has to get worked through. So I appreciate you bringing that up. So thank you. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I heard you say something about the wheel insect, but I don't know what it was. You said something about you repealing that?
He's
or?
Opposed to it.
Representative Drazkowski.
Really? That's incredible.
What were you saying about the wheelage tax for Representative Earhart?
I'm trying to do shorthand for you.
Well, Madam Chair, thank you. Representative Earhart, the legislature, I don't know if you recall or not, but we gave local government the authority to raise taxes without voter approval, and this would repeal that authority from the local units of government and give your voters a voice again, that voice that was taken away from them last session.
Okay. Further? Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it. And then I'm going to go ahead and move. We have a little confusion. We have Representative Johnson's bill in the packet, but he had said he's okay with not hearing it, so that one's not coming up. And I'm going to move my bill that I referenced earlier but I never put before us, which is House File 1777, and so that's before us. And I have a DE1 amendment, and it's in the packet, and I hope members will vote to put that on. So I'm going to move my own DE1 amendment to House File 1777. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. The amendment's adopted. And so with that, unless I missed something, we've heard every single bill now of the 25 bills that were on the agenda. So now we want to go to testimony on all the business-to-business repeals, and I want to take Ms. Gadoon first, if I can. So I appreciate the patience for folks who want to talk about all of them, and thank you so much. Ms. Gadoon, welcome again.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Beth Gadoon, again, for the record, representing the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I'm also here representing the United for Jobs Coalition. The United for Jobs Coalition is an organization associated with about 96 business associations and local chambers of commerce that have their priority is repeal of all three of the business-to-business taxes. Hopefully in your packets, I'm not sure if it was in your packets or for handouts, but there is a two-pager that lists some of our policy reasons for repeal, as well as all the associations. And then we also have a petition that you should have as handout or in your packet. That has over 1,600 signatures of business associations, businesses, and individuals across all the state of Minnesota advocating for repeal of all three of these taxes. Many of these associations are in the room today or were earlier, but we try to be respectful of the committee's time, and we certainly appreciate all the time you have taken. We thought it was more important, obviously, to hear from the businesses that were here and try to get a good representative of those businesses. I first do want to thank all the legislators, the chief authors, as well as the many co-authors on a bipartisan basis that have advocated in support of repeal. And thank you again to Chair Lucheski for hearing all these bills, especially that first day of session. We think that sends a really good signal to the business community that are definitely hopeful that these do get repealed. The Minnesota Chamber and the United for Jobs Coalition strongly advocates for early repeal of all three of these taxes for the following reasons. We do believe they really do undermine future economic and job growth in Minnesota. They harm Minnesota's competitiveness, and they place important industries at risk. You heard from those businesses and industries today. They especially are going to be impacting those businesses that are so key to Minnesota's success in manufacturing, printing, farming, logging, mining, and the storage and warehouse industry. They truly do undermine their competitiveness, as you heard, and really do put those industries at risk for their future viability, their expansions, and job growth in the state. The other tax that you'll hear from the industry as well is on that telecommunications equipment tax. You'll hear more from the industry on that. But that does really undermine that investment in the state on that broadband infrastructure. That's going to be so critical to make sure Minnesota has a strong economic future and growth. I just want to highlight a couple of other economic or policy reasons on these business-to-business taxes. They really are bad tax policy. I think you can talk to any economist or tax policy expert who tell you these are bad policy. They result in tax pyramiding, that tax upon a tax. They also are hidden and regressive taxes. The Minnesota Department of Revenue's analysis showed that 90% of these taxes will fall on Minnesota households through increased prices as well as through lower wages. They create economic distortions. Businesses change their behavior because of these taxes. They harm small and mid-sized businesses more, who have less ability to be able to mitigate the impact of these taxes. They do make Minnesota a tax outlier. Most states do not tax these, especially on the storage and warehouse tax. Majority do not tax the labor for repairs, and the trend in the country is to exempt more of the telecommunications tax as well. We strongly encourage early repeal. We've already heard of those lost business opportunities and jobs. Early repeal would really help mitigate more of those businesses having to make those hard choices that they don't want to make. Most, they do want to grow here throughout, you know, and expand here. In addition, there is a considerable cost to start enforcing and complying with new tax laws. So if you can repeal it or send that signal prior to that April 1st date, that would really help mitigate any of those costs because businesses are going to have to get up and running to impose that new tax. So thank you, and I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Cadoon. Thank you for waiting through all that.
Thank you.
And thank you for waiting through all that. I don't know you, but I've been seeing you sitting there. Welcome to the committee. Long,
good afternoon,
long
Madam
hearing.
Chair and members of the committee. My name is the Reverend Nazim Fakir, and I'm pastor of St. Peter's AME Church in Minneapolis. I'm also the president of the Minnesota State Chapter of the Ministerial Alliance Against the Digital Divide, otherwise known as MAD. And I'm here to testify on support of the telecommunications tax exemption. MAD is a more than 220,000 member next generation civil rights organization led by ministers that are devoting to bridging the digital divide and promoting the use of technology in low-income and minority communities across the country. We believe that access to technology is the game changer that can not only build new communities, but we can create solutions for many problems that our communities face. Concerns such as high unemployment rates, a lack of access to state-of-the-art health care, and the difficulty for many to receive a quality education are just a few issues that can be crippling to people living in low-income and minority neighborhoods as they create barriers that can hold people back from opportunity. But broadband technology can break down these barriers by making opportunity within reach. No longer does a person's address need to determine whether or not they can succeed. Broadband technology brings unlimited potential to people living in every corner of Minnesota. Broadband is not only a renaissance for commerce, but it can provide tremendous benefits to regular citizens throughout Minnesota. For example, high-speed internet technology can allow a single mother to get an education online while she puts her children to bed. It can provide health care to a diabetic shut-in by giving that person the ability to download blood sugar, send the data to a physician remotely, and have that physician make necessary adjustments to his or her medical dosage. It can be a lifeline to an unemployed man or woman who now has the opportunity to create gainful employment by starting a business online and hiring others in the community as that company grows. Cities like Chicago have even seized upon broadband to create online charter schools where children living in poor performing school districts can now obtain their education at no cost online. These are only a few areas where broadband can change the dynamics in Minnesota community to provide opportunity for anyone who wants to seize it. Unfortunately, Minnesota's current sales tax on telecommunications equipment is hampering our chances for the necessary broadband investment to be available to our people now and in the future. We know that when funds and resources are limited, that our communities are typically the first to be impacted, as investment resources will be generally allocated to wealthier communities, leaving our communities with inferior technology. As newer technology is available and as broadband becomes ingrained in every aspect of daily life, we risk that low-income populations will stagnate, leaving a digital chasm that is even bigger than anything that we've seen in the past. It will be equivalent to having low-income and minority communities operate with a 386 computer in an iPad world. We must not let that happen. MAD's mission is to see the digital divide become a relic of the past. But more importantly, we need to embrace broadband technology as the great equalizer for our generation and generations to come. We can't construct state-of-the-art broadband networks on our own, but we can provide incentives for private industry to make investments in digital networks that will allow us to develop programs that promote agendas like digital literacy, job training, STEM education, and broadband adoption. In order to do this, we need to make sure that broadband investment is continually flowing in these communities. And just having this investment in place is not enough. With the fast pace that technology constantly changes, we must make sure there is continued investment in the latest state-of-the-art broadband technologies in these communities. So repealing this tax and extending the tax exemption on telecommunications equipment will provide the incentives necessary to ensure that investment continues to flow to our communities. And if we can get this latest broadband technology in the hands of our people, we as a community can use this tool to bring the necessary programs that will provide opportunity for all. I certainly thank you for your listening and taking the time.
Thank you so much for your testimony, Minister Lazier.
Nazim.
Nazim. Fakir. Okay, we were trying to get it right. I hope you're going to sign it.
N-A-Z-I-M, first name. F as in Frank, A-K-I-R, last name.
Okay, thank you so much. Appreciate you being here and for waiting all that time. Thank you. Further testimony on these bills. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. Welcome. Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, and members of the committee. I'm Mike Martin. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Cable Communications Association. We're a trade group of cable companies across Minnesota. Last week, our association was pleased to be a founding member of the All Minnesota Broadband Alliance. The alliance brings together over 60 competing Minnesota telecommunications companies and trade associations supporting the repeal of the sales tax on telecommunications equipment, and many are represented here today. As you all know, having first-class access to a high-speed internet connection is at the core of our state's innovation and economic competitiveness. Maintaining the highest level of telecommunications investment in Minnesota is a key issue for our state and critical to big and small business, rural health care delivery, and educational institutions, just to name a few. Dr. Raul Katz, president of Telecom Advisory Services and adjunct professor of economics at Columbia Business School, prepared a report for the alliance, Assessment of the Economic Impact of the Repeal of the Tax Exemption on Telecommunications Equipment. We've shared it with the committee, and I think it's been, thank you. I encourage you to review it. It clearly shows that repealing the tax on telecommunications equipment is the best way for Minnesota to maximize investments in broadband access across the entire state. Further, the tax exemption is technology neutral and enables all Minnesotans to have access to high-speed internet and wireless communications. In 2013, just as the governor's task force on broadband recommended expanding the telecommunications tax exemption to provide additional resources to meet the state's broadband goals, Minnesota law was changed to levy a 7% tax on telecommunications equipment. Additionally, no other industry in Minnesota is subject to a sales tax on capital equipment. Our industry's equivalent to modern manufacturing and the backbone tool of business, government, education, and innovation. The telecommunications industry has made substantial investments in Minnesota in recent years. The study shows that between 2006 and 2012, total investment exceeded $5 billion, an investment equal to $836 for every man, woman, and child in the state. Over half of this substantial investment went to expanding broadband services, with 50% of that dedicated to isolated communities, suburban, and rural areas. Many Alliance members operate in other states, meaning that as companies look at places to allocate limited resources for capital expenditures, Minnesota will be negatively impacted. If we want to remain at the top of the investment list and ensure our state has access to the best high-speed broadband and internet capabilities possible, this regressive tax on the telecommunications industry should be removed. Consistent with the recommendations of Governor Dayton and his task force on broadband, we strongly encourage the repeal of the sales tax on telecom equipment. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Martin. Appreciate you being here. Nice to see you again. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. For the record, my name is Brent Christensen, and I'm with the Minnesota Telecom Alliance, and we're a trade association that represents 46 independent telecommunications carriers in Minnesota. And like my colleague in the cable industry, I'm here to talk to you about the reinstating of the sales tax exemption on telecom equipment. First, I believe it's important for the committee to understand the type of equipment that was eligible for the sales tax exemption until June 30th of 2013. Today's telecommunications network relies on expensive electronic equipment to deliver voice, video, and data services. The equipment exempt from taxation is not purchased by the end user or consumer. Rather, it's a capital equipment used in the provision of telecommunication services. The sales tax exemption on telecommunications equipment was enacted in 2001, and at that time it had bipartisan support in its passage. The logic behind exempting telecommunications equipment from sales tax was that it allows all providers to stretch their limited capital budgets. It's fair to say that sales tax exemption, which 29 other states already have in place, has played an important role in the build-out of Minnesota's telecommunications infrastructure. Currently, the telecommunications industry is the only industry that pays sales tax on capital equipment purchases. Telecommunications is specifically singled out in statute. It is not fair to our customers or our communities who face dollar-for-dollar capital spending reductions and delays in broadband investment in communities throughout the state. MTA members are constantly reinvesting and replacing network infrastructure. Consumers benefit from these investments through greater broadband capacity and improved network infrastructure. Eliminating the sales tax exemption will have a negative, or is having a negative, consequences on network investments and jobs in Minnesota, as Mr. Martin outlined. In 2011, the legislature established aspirational broadband goals for border-to-border coverage along with speed goals. The sales tax exemption is the only economic incentive the state has offered providers to help meet those broadband goals. Eliminating the sales tax exemption is inconsistent with the state's broadband goals and only serves to reduce investment. When the sales tax was implemented last July, the impact was not immediate for most companies that already had their CapEx budgets in place. If the sales tax exemption is not reinstated this session, it will have a dramatic negative impact on future deployment of broadband and necessary equipment upgrades. The state set broadband goals in the statute to reach by 2015. The loss of the sales tax exemption will likely have an impact on the ability for the state to meet those goals. On behalf of the membership of the MTA and Minnesota consumers we serve, we request that the legislature reinstate the telecommunications equipment sales tax exemption and treat telecommunications the same as every other industry with regards to capital equipment purchases. I'd be happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you so much for your testimony, Mr. Christensen. Nice to see you. Questions, anyone? Okay, further testifiers on these bills? Anyone else? I'm stalling because I still have an amendment. It's at duplicating. I'll quickly say what it is. It's the same exact federal conformity amendment I put on the other one. It's just a little fix, and I thought it would be easier to just put it on so when we take the bill up again, we would have it in the order we wanted it. But I'm not sure if...
Madam Chair?
Yes. Representative Myra.
I was looking at the minutes in our packet for April the 17th, and I noticed an error. Could we fill in this blank time with that? On the first page, members voting aye. For some reason, my vote is not recorded.
Member
Myra at the very bottom.
Aye. Let's look at that. Okay. Would you like to vote aye or nay then? From back on April 17th.
Aye, on the 17th, please.
Yes. Can we make that, members, can we move the minutes and amend Representative Myra in there right now? Okay. So Representative Dabney moves the minutes amended to include Representative Myra voting aye on the roll call from Representative Garofalo on the 677A17 amendment. Is that correct?
Thank you. Yes, it is.
Thank you. And thank you, Representative Dabney, for the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. The minutes are adopted. Ms. Manzi, any luck on that amendment? Okay, let's do that. Oh, here it is. Oh, okay. Mr. Beltrandi, I don't know where he went. Now we have a whole bunch of things. I think he went looking for you, actually.
Did he?
Yeah. So, if members are okay, I'd like to move the DE or the A1, and this is the same amendment I added to the earlier bill. Just attached, just to have it done right for House File 1777. Is that right, Ms. Manzi?
Yeah.
Okay. Any questions on that? All in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye. Aye. Opposed, say nay. The amendment is adopted. You know, it really is warm. I mean, I can feel the heat coming off the folder. We are on the last bill, and so is there anyone else who wants to testify? Otherwise, we're going to finish. I'm going to lay this over then, and I just want to say a couple things, and that is we are going to cancel tax committee tomorrow. We did not schedule what we would do because we weren't sure what would happen today, and so we got through them all, so we're not going to meet tomorrow. My intention is to use House File 1777 as the vehicle for this continuing discussion of federal conformity and business-to-business taxes. So what I'd like to ask House Research is to redraft a new summary on that bill with the amendments that have been added. And so what it is it's the federal conformity items we've talked about and the B2B repeals all in one bill. And that way we can get a clean House summary that has everything on there. And if we can take these things up early, depending on what all legislators and the governor and the Senate and the House DFL caucus and House Republican caucus thinks, that would be the piece I would like to work off of. It is a bill I'm carrying on another item with Senator Skoy, so it would line up with the Senate. So that would be the intended vehicle, and I'd like to, if we are able to take it up early, to start fresh with that being the bill we'll work off, which will be 1777. Okay? So if that makes sense, Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there, I maybe missed it, but is there a score sheet on how much it spends?
There is, and we haven't spent a lot of time on that, but it is in that same bill, 1777. And if Ms. Templin wants to just join us quick, it's a little more expensive than that says now because I just added some amendments to do some more federal conformity. Ms. Templin, you want to tell us in round numbers, just so everyone thinks about this, what would these sort of, you know, tax cuts for business, and I should say, you know, we keep framing federal conformity as, you know, middle class tax cuts and, you know, average income and low income tax cuts. And then we talk about the business to business tax cuts as, you know, there's something different than that. You know, the business to business tax cuts are middle class tax cuts too. They're regressive and they disproportionately fall harder on low income and middle income Minnesotans, and they are ultimately passed down. So I think of them as a package of that. But I think the bill is around $475 million, but with the new amendments, you know, Ms. Templin, maybe you can tell us what that would, what we're looking at right now in broad terms, and we know revenue and need to rescore this with amendments and items like that. Ms. Templin.
Madam Chair, Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff. For your bill, House File 1777, the sales tax provisions, those provisions have not been amended. And the score, the table that Ms. Dalton prepared shows that for the sales tax provisions, the estimated revenue reduction is $314.4 million for the biennium, for the current biennium. In addition, Representative Lencheski just amended her bill with the it's being amended.
It was a few more retro.
I have it in my pile here.
Yeah, and retro federal conformity.
And prior to that, with those changes, the federal conformity provisions for the biennium should be in the neighborhood of about $200 million. That does need to be rescored. Prior to that, in the DE2 version of the bill, it was around $185 million for federal conformity provisions. So the two of those combined, the federal conformity and the sales tax provisions, are in the neighborhood of about $500 million.
Okay. So House File 1777, as amended, we will ask revenue to score that bill. Correct. So that if we are able to get early action, we know we're now talking about, you know, in the neighborhood of that. Mm-hmm. And members may feel, this committee may change that or not want to do that or go up or down or whatever. And we may not be able to get agreement to do something early, but we definitely want to try. So that's sort of the ballpark of where the bill is sitting right now. One thing I did, I called Ms. Templin, last week, and, you know, so many bills that we pass, you just double it for the biennium, what the price tag is. But that isn't the case here, and I think that's important for the tax committee to think about for when we get a target. So doubling a $500 million bucket of tax cuts isn't a billion next biennium. And Ms. Templin gave me an early number on what she thought that would be, because there are a number of one-time provisions like retro refunds and things going on in federal conformity. And maybe, Ms. Templin, you could just give us a guesstimate. I know we're not going to hold you to this because this has to get scored, but the price tag in the biennium is not near double next biennium. And remember, members, we have a $2 billion surplus in the next biennium. So, I mean, we as the tax committee have to think about how these would affect this biennium and next if we were to enact any of these changes. So, Ms. Templin, can you give us a guess what the ongoing cost of, if we were to do these tax cuts, what the ongoing cost of the budget is?
Yes, Madam Chair. To your question about the estimated revenue, general fund revenue impact in the fiscal 16 and 17 biennium, it is in the neighborhood of about $641 million. For general fund tails, and then there's also a revenue reduction to the legacy funds.
And you know, we did not talk about that, but that's the case in anything, members, that we, you know, have to be aware of. You know, the legacy just operates off the sales tax, so maybe Ms. Dalton can just talk to us a little bit about how that works. You know, that's something the legislature will have to think through, because as sales tax go up or down, legacy does too. Ms. Dalton.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, as Representative Lencheski said, the sales tax base for the legacy fund is the exact same sales tax base as we have for the state, and it's kind of required to be that way. So if you reduce the tax base for the state the general fund tax, you are automatically going to be reducing the revenues in the natural resource and arts funds. The bill, as my sheet says, for the 2014-2015 biennium, that will be a reduction of $18.2 million. To the extent that the legacy committees have spent that money, there may need to be either some adjustments in what they spend, or there may need to be some additional money given to them one time to deal with that.
And so I think that's another good example of why we need a little bit here for everyone to think through how, if we could get an early agreement, how all these provisions will work together, because if the legacy money was already appropriated, we may have to appropriate money to have that work in the targeting process. But certainly my intent would be, if the sales tax is cut in these B2Bs and then, you know, permanently, we're not going to, you know, hold that constant. I mean, that that legacy base sits with our Minnesota state sales tax. So we may have a short-term issue that we have to think through so that people are held whole. And it's something that I think people aren't, you know, isn't something that people are thinking about in the other committees, but this committee is going to have to think that through. Other questions for Ms. Dalton on that? Rep. Samir Earhart?
I was going to ask, how much do you need in the forecast to make this work?
I'm not going to say. I personally probably need a lower number than others, but I think, I should just say, I do want to say that, you know, the governor has been tremendous in trying to get to where folks want to get to, and I know people want to sort of be upset about what happened last time, but we did have a deficit, and it was something that while people knew House wasn't too thrilled about, you know, the Senate agreed to provisions that they weren't thrilled from the House. And that's how negotiation works. I mean, everyone did the best they could in the situation we had. And so now we do have a surplus, and we have an ongoing surplus, a permanent structural surplus. So I think we're in a good position to act on some of these, and I do think early. I mean, that's my hope, but, you know, we all know everybody has a say, every single legislator and everybody else. So I don't know what the number will have to be Friday morning for this to work. I think we would all feel that there's a different number required for this to work. But what's your number?
1.1.
Oh, okay. Okay. Anything else on all of these? Thank you so much to everyone who came and talked to us about them. And with that, we are canceling tomorrow, and we are adjourning.